What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blindside Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and of course, alongside me there is Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back for another week of NFL Talk. That's right, we're here to give you the best dosage of NFL Talk you can get. And we're the most interactive talk show out there. So we are live right now. So if you comment down below, whether it be about your team, if something you want to talk about, the trades that happened today, like it's been crazy so far this week, but definitely get in tune with us. And you can do just simply head over to grumblingsmedia.com. On the website there, you're going to find some articles. You're going to have other podcasts too. That's at sports, entertainment, political, anything that you're into. Over there. Also, do us a huge favor, head over to YouTube for us at Grumblings Media. Make sure you hit that subscribe button for us. Hit the thumbs up. Also, drop a comment down below and say you're here. And also, you can take us on the go anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right. Absolutely, Joe. And that's you talked about it. You talked about that trade or a couple of the trades here. We're going to get right into those. And then also later tonight, we're going to talk about some of the coaches that are on the hot seat right now. There's some hot, warm seats right there. So we'll get to that in a little bit. And then also our week 7 picks. This week was good to us, Joe. We did very good this week. So it's nice. Get back on the saddle here. Here we go. But all right, here's the news that dropped. Later today or earlier on today now, Davante Adams, yeah. There goes after a bad game last night between both teams. They both go for trades today. They're like, oh, man, we definitely learned something after last night, and this is what we learned. We both need a wide receiver after this, going for field goals. They both maybe too.
I mean, the funny thing is we need a wide receiver, but is that really going to solve all the issues that the offense looked better? I'll say that in that Bills game, the Jets did look better at times. So, I mean, now that they were able to add Davante Adams to that team, now you got to worry about Adams on one side, Garrett Wilson on the other. And people were like, well, what's going to happen to Mike Williams? Well, he's on the trade block, honestly. Like, he wasn't utilized hardly at all anyway. Alan Lazard has been more in a usage package than Mike. So, he's going to probably way out via trade somewhere. Don't know where. Maybe Kansas City, because I know they haven't been able to pull off a trade for a wide receiver yet. Maybe Mike Williams goes to Kansas City for a cheap draft pick or whatever, like a low-end draft pick. So the Jets finally get it to work out. Well, you have the Vegas Raiders and the Jets come to terms. What it's being seen as right now is it's a conditional third-round pick with the potential of turning into a second-round pick. And two things have – either or, I should say. Either thing has to happen. Either the Jets make the AFC championship game or Davante Adams himself has to make first team or second team all-pro. So if one of those things happen, then it turns into a second-round pick. Otherwise, it'll just be a third-round pick. So – I don't know about you, Jim. Who do you think in this trade scenario? Who do you think won? Do you think anybody lost? Do you think someone won? Do you think kind of like even? What's your take on this?
My take on this is if I was the Raiders, I mean, I would have even tried to hold out a little longer for something better. I mean, yes, it's conditional too, which it could be, because you would think that with Davante Adams using that offense and the way Aaron Rodgers doesn't trust anybody there at all, especially Mike Williams, especially after last night too. After the dude even slipped and still attempted to catch it, and Aaron Rodgers still like, man, this guy sucks. You know, it's like walking around, like, oh man, I can't trust this guy at all. You know, and so Davante Adams is still going to get yardage, and he's going to be up there, and he could potentially make All Pro here to get that changed into a second, but. For this caliber of a guy still, even at his age, I mean, I would have said definitely a number two and then something else. And the fact that he just walk away with a third and like I said, potentially to be a second, I think, especially with how desperate the Jets are after that game, you would figure they're coming in and they instantly were on the phone. Hey, we're desperate, man. What do you got here for us? You know, please, you know, we'll do this. And the Raiders like, yeah, that sounds good. I would be like, no, give me more. What else do you want? You know, I can hear the desperation. So I feel like the Raiders should have got more out of this trade for Davante Adams, especially for what he brings to that team. And the fact that, yes, he's not going to be there, for the Raiders, obviously, because he wanted out. But the value, I think, just isn't there in the trade.
I think that, you know, I kind of agree. I think the Raiders should have stuck it out a little bit more. I mean, everybody around the league was saying, we're not going to give up a second round. The asking price is too high. Well, here's the funny thing is, like, you look at past trades, because you do, you compare what happened before, like Amari Cooper years ago from the Raiders, he went for a first round pick, but then you look at him because he was younger. So that kind of makes sense. But then you look at some of these other, some of the other veteran wide receivers that have traded for fourth round picks, third round picks, and maybe even a couple of mid round picks. It's Davante Adams. Like, this is not any of those other trade scenarios. You can make the case, be like, yeah, but it's Davante. Like, this is just a mid-tier, upper mid-tier type of wide receiver. This is a guy who's been in the league for a number of years and has done it at such a high level. Still, even at 32, considered one of the best in the league. So if you have that kind of a caliber player, you have to capitalize on it if both sides want to place. I think they should have held on to him. I think they should have him play next week for the Raiders. I think they shouldn't have rushed into a trade. And they should have played a little hard to get in this scenario, because the Jets were fiending for a wide receiver. The Bills were fiending for a wide receiver. The Steelers are looking. And it was all, they had the advantage in this. Like, they right. could have held mm-hmm. out for a little bit more. And if they wanted a higher pick, we've seen this happen in trade scenarios before. They give up a low round pick just to get that little bump up to the second round.
Right.
And it depends on the team, right? So, like, you look at the Jets right now, and the Jets haven't been playing good football. They're losing a lot of games. And they haven't been the team we thought they were going to turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
All being said, just by adding Davante, doesn't all of a sudden turn this team around and now they're Super Bowl caliber? Like, I get how good Davante is, but the whole team as a whole needs to play much better than what they showed even against the Bills. Now, both teams screwed up in that game. There were some mistakes made on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
But it was sloppy. It was sloppy on the Jets' part. And you add a key like that, he's going to command the football. And that was kind of like the bigger story between and him, is like he felt like he wasn't a bigger part of the offense anymore and wanted to where that he either has a chance to compete for a championship or definitely get his numbers. So a little bit of that diva mentality. But with that, you know, with the Jets and Davante, good for them that they pulled off this. And they got him for basically just a third-round pick. I think that the Jets won the trade. I mean, hands down, I don't think you can really debate it. Because here's what you have to look at it as. Yes, it could possibly turn into a second-rounder. But it is a third-rounder. That's what you've agreed to. And even if it turned into a second-rounder, and the Jets make it into the playoffs, it's a second-rounder in the latter part of the draft. This is not a high-end second-round pick then. So the value for Davante Adams, you're saying, is diminished greatly. And you're okay with this. So I think that the Jets won, hands down, with this trade. The Raiders lost. And I got to say, like, I'm a little disappointed in newly hired Tom Telesco as a GM thus far. This Tom has been making poor decisions as a GM. And now you have an opportunity to really kind of capitalize on a trade for a upper echelon type of player, and you only get a third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree too. That's the thing, is like you didn't get the compensation, and I feel like they, you know, knowing that people are shopping around that you know you had all this interest. You still have until right before week 8 here to go, so you had another week to go here and see how desperate people really get and what they're going to shell out. I think that they pulled the trigger now, I think, is a little premature and interesting.
You could have waited right down to the 12th hour. Like, you could have waited right for it and then be like, okay, we'll take that deal. That's what we're going to get. Let's just do it. Here's the crazy thing, though. Go back a year. Go back to last draft, before the draft happened. The Jets wanted Davante really badly then. So badly, they were willing to give up not one, but two second-round picks. And the Raiders said no. Honestly, they knew what the contract was. The contract coming up next year had $35 million tag on it, and they weren't going to pay. So if you had any thoughts of moving on from Devontae in a year's time, why not pull that trade off? Why not before the draft even happened, send Devontae to the Jets for not one but two second rounders, and they were second rounders, conditional. So to me, that was a missed opportunity for the Raiders. And now that they've stalled and waited so long, that nobody is willing to pay what they were looking for, and they miss out.
Yep. So here we go. We get to see Devontae Adams here reunited with Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be Devontae. And, I mean, you talked about it with Mike Williams on his way out. Yeah, I mean, I think that's obvious. But I think this is going to also hinder, I think, Garrett Wilson's production as well. You know what I mean? Drastically. Because you see what he does with Aaron Rodgers. He trusts in Alan Lazard so much. That's his go-to guy. Now Devontae's here. I just see those two as the 1-2 punch. And Garrett Wilson, you know, bringing up, you know, the cleanup after all of it, which is a good position to be in, though. But
see, I see it a different way. I see it that this is going to enhance Garrett Wilson's productivity, not away from it, because Devontae's going to always get double teamed. Like he's just that good. So he's going to still get the attention he deserves. But now look at what Garrett Wilson did against the Bills. Like, he was pretty darn successful in that game. It's just him. Alan Lazard, yeah, nice kind of like possession type receiver piece, but he's not a playmaker. He's not. And now that you put Devontae in there, now a lot of the attention, instead of it all being on Garrett Wilson, now it's going to be shifted. It's going to go over to Devontae more often than not. And that's going to be up Garrett Wilson even more than before. So it's going to kind of help out both players. Like, Devontae is still going to get his catches, but Garrett Wilson now, he's not the lone shark, the lone playmaker on that team. So I look for this offense to be more diverse now. It's going to be able to, you know, Aaron Rodgers can now have the freedom to spread the ball around. Now he has yet another familiar face that he already has chemistry with. Like, it's almost going to be like effortless when we see them next together.
Yeah.
And then Garrett Wilson, they're still working on it, and you saw a big improvement against the Bills with that chemistry for Garrett Wilson. So this is going to be amazing for the Jets offense. But again, they have to win as a team. They cannot continue to make mistakes. So let's see how this offense thrives and see how the defense feeds off of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you brought up, they need to limit mistakes. I mean, they're second right now in overall penalties with 50 penalties, only second to the Houston Texans with 51. And that's what you see with this team. If they were penalized so much, I think their record's completely different, too, because that put them out in so many games already this season. I mean, that set up the Bills a few different times here. Previously, I can't remember exactly what game it was, but Sauce Gardner was called for, like, pass interference, like, three possessions right in a row, or, you know, three downs right in a row, and brought it right down to the goal line just about. So these guys got to eliminate the mistakes, and that's one thing that the head coach really has to do. You know, if one thing, if you had to say it about possibly you know, with Robert Saleh, maybe that was the issue. He wasn't getting – you think he would teach discipline, because he looks like that's what he does. He's a very disciplined guy, takes care of his body, runs up and down the steps every single day when he's in there. But the team wasn't disciplined at all. There's mistakes everywhere. And now it continued here, and that offense ran a lot better, I think, with a different play caller, you know. So I think that made a difference. That was a difference that now a change that Robert Saleh was going to make in the first place. But
exactly.
We didn't get to see a whole difference with the head coaching job. Everything looked pretty much the same, except he's calling the plays right there still like he was before, but just with the coach's headset on there and everything. And the defense, if it wasn't for their defense, you know, I think they wouldn't be in some of these games here too. But the offense looked a lot better. They definitely ran Breece Hall a bit better, and they got him out into some passing plays too. So I think Aaron Rodgers was a little more mobile too, I think. And I think a mobile Aaron Rodgers is a better setup for them in their offense.
You talk about Aaron Rodgers being mobile. Now, he got a little banged up in that game, too.
Oh, so yeah, he did.
Got to definitely watch out for Aaron Rodgers' health, too, because Devontae just got there. Now, it would be a complete, like, you know, let the air out of the balloon type of feeling for the Jets if he got so banged up he's going to miss some time. Because right. getting up off the field a couple times where he got up pretty slow and gingerly walking, and man, he cannot continue to take hits. The offensive line's a much better job of pass protecting. Run blocking, they're pretty darn good at. Pass blocking, there's holes there from time to time, and they gotta correct that. They gotta get better for the next week and really soon, because you know, no defense is going to take it easy on him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You think that Devontae in that trade deal, he maybe finagled a way to get a Taco Bell inside MetLife Stadium?
I don't think so. I think that was a nice. Vegas thing. It was a Vegas thing.
Oh, boy. All right.
You
got
to get the house in Vegas, but, you know. I think the house is going to be more valuable now. He's going to sell that.
Ooh, big time. All right, so, now the team that played last night as well here, they go and make the trade for Amari Cooper after the news breaks here. So you figure they were in sweepstakes for Davante Adams. Didn't work out for them. So there they go, Amari Cooper. You had heard that he wanted out of Cleveland with the way that place is going right now. It's a big dumpster fire. And Amari Cooper here, he has traded to the Bills. The Browns will receive a 2025 third-round pick and a 2026 seventh round pick. The Bills will also receive 2025 sixth round pick in that trade. That's a good pickup for the Bills, I think, too. And I think compensation is good. I think that's a nice even trade for everybody at this one here.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is, like, you know, Amari Cooper. What's funny about Cooper to me is he never looks happy ever. Like,
right.
His whole NFL career, he had, like, the picture that you have right there of him smiling.
That was hard to find.
I've never seen him smile like that. The dude looks miserable no matter what he's doing, even if he's, like, leading the league in yards or anything like that. This dude's miserable, at least looking anyway. But, yeah, Amari Cooper, you know, maybe he's now on his way to Buffalo saying, yeah, I got a quarterback that can throw me the ball. I got an offense. That's going to put up points. Like, I'm excited. A new environment, and you're going to a competitive team pushing for the playoffs. So he's got to feel right about that. And this is something that the Bills needed to happen, whether it be Cooper, whether it be Devontae, whether it be somebody else. They desperately needed a playmaking wide receiver, and now they got that Amari Cooper. So insert Amari Cooper. Keon Coleman, sorry, bud, but I think you're diminished greatly. Khalil Shakir is still going to hold on to that kind of like slot receiver role.
Yep.
Keon Coleman becomes that number two now. But Amari Cooper, I mean, this is a excellent trade for the Bills, because I feel like he fits this offense really, really well. Just like he did in Cleveland.
Yep.
But Buffalo, you got that quarterback now that utilizes his legs, that can get you the football down the field. And now, finally, you know, I can honestly say with confidence that I believe Buffalo now, because this was something that was greatly missing. As soon as Diggs left, I had major concerns, like, how are they going to fill that void? Are they going to do it in the draft? And they did, not for a playmaking guy who's going to just flat out run by everybody.
Yeah.
A guy who's still kind of figuring things out in the NFL. Now he has great potential. But I think he needs to be shifted in the slot, honestly. I think that's where he can do a lot of damage. Let's see if the Bills change some things around and do that. But, man, I like this for the Bills. For the Browns, you get more compensation to screw up your football team, because, I mean, they've drafted so many picks are on that team currently. And not to say that they're bad, but it seems everybody they draft eventually leaves the team. Like, nobody really sticks around and stays. And so it's like, I'm just kind of wondering, like, now that you've gotten compensation for Amari Cooper, what are you doing for the future? Like, are you building? Because that's something nobody wants to hear. You know, they've Kevin Stefanski out this week and basically told the press, hey, we're definitely sticking with Deshaun. And wanted to confirm that to everybody, because some people have been spreading the rumor like, oh, Jameis Winston in, like, he's going to give us a shot to win games and he'll do a better job. I'd be careful what you're asking for there. Right. Winston has never been successful after leaving Tampa. He hasn't been successful anywhere. So Cleveland, I think kind of grind it out with Deshaun. I think you have to try to figure out new ways at offense and how to get like what we saw this week. We saw him run a lot more.
Yeah.
Like he was running almost every snap. Almost.
Yeah. So
that's good, but I think that he had to run too much. I'd like to see him utilize both in the run game, himself running the football, and dumping the ball off to, you know, David Njoku a little bit more, you know, mixed with other receivers. So for the Browns, like, I don't definitely think it's not going to get any better because now they don't have Cooper at least. But they do get back Nick Chubb. So there is a little bit of, you know, hope for Browns.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got Back to the Stone Ages with us tonight here.
What's going on, Stone Age?
All right. The Bills pulled off a masculine trade, getting a true number one wide receiver at dirt cheap price, not even a big cap hit since the geniuses in Cleveland converted most of Coop's salary to a signing bonus this summer. So there you go. Yep. Bills, I think, they did well in this one. They needed it, like Joe said, absolutely. He's going to plug right in and be Josh Allen's number one guy right there, you know, opposite to Khalil Shakir again. He's going to be putting up numbers too. You've got your tight end still. But now some of that stress now I think is alleviated with Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. And you see the difference. Luckily, they've found this guy, Davis, that's been able to help them out in the running game. Or else I think the running game would kind of be non-existent too.
Ray Ray's a draft pick.
Yeah,
Ray
right.
Ray just got drafted this year. And Ray Ray Davis, if you go back to my rankings, he was one of my favorite guys coming out. And I nobody knew before kickoff. Nobody knew that James Cook was going to be out this week.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I was getting alerts on my phone. I'm like, James Cook out? What do you mean? Like right before kickoff? Just like, are you kidding me? And I was like, I'm thinking from a fantasy perspective. I'm like, I could have added Ray Davis and I could have started him. Mm-hmm. And then look at what he did. Like Ray Davis is a real dude. Like so, they got one hell of a backfield with James Cook now. Ray Davis. And even Johnson there who did well, you know, so they got nice backfield there and now they're going to even have it even better receiving core.
Right. Cause even the past couple of weeks, Josh Allen's been putting up just, you know, like 100-something yards, you know, very minimal, but still getting touchdowns here and there, but you know, not really getting the passing yards going. So now I think that'll, with Amari Cooper, the addition there. Excuse me, that'll help that and get that going for him and help alleviate that stress of him putting it all on his shoulders because you know that's what he's been doing the last couple of weeks here. And so I think that they're going to get better too. So I think they edged out this win with the Jets. Jets had an opportunity to be able to take them, but I think too many penalties, botched kicks. There it was tough for them, but Amari Cooper is now a Buffalo Bill. I think it's a great move for them. But Bills fans got to be excited. I know I talked to a Bills fan before the game last night, and I said, hey, man, what'd you think about the team tonight and this and this? And he's just like, we need to get a wide receiver, and I want Micah Hyde back. I was like, well, you're not getting Micah Hyde back. I'm like, you guys should never let him leave the building, you know. But and then you will get a receiver. It's just who it is. We don't know yet, and now we find out.
Honestly, after the game, too, like, I was on edge about the kicker. I'm like, dude. Tyler Bass needs to be fired. Like, you can't miss kicks like that horrendously. And wasn't he like, they showed the replay, and he just flat out kicking it wide left, missing right. That's inexcusable for a kicker at the NFL level.
But yeah, like, Zerline missed more two that were just – he was complaining about the wind and everything. But, I mean, come on, man. Zerline, you've been doing this forever, buddy. You know what I mean? Be a professional here. So hits the pole a few times. Here we go. We've got Back to the Stone Age again. Here he goes. And what about the trade of Cam Carry It Like a Loaf of Bread Acres to the Vikings? Sent tremors throughout the NFL.
I don't know about tremors throughout the NFL.
Yeah.
It's such a low grade type of trade. Cam Akers, the interesting part about that trade, though, what I'll say is that there's some kind of major concern for Aaron Jones's health right now because he missed last week. Ty Johnson for the Vikings took over, and or they had a bye week last week.
Yeah.
But Ty Johnson's going to be the guy that's going to be the lead dog. And now, with this trade for Cam Akers, that kind of leads you to believe that maybe he's going to be out longer than they thought he was going to be. So if that's the case, then that makes a lot of sense by getting a trade for another running back like Cam Akers. I'm not a fan of Cam Akers. I thought they could have maybe traded for someone even better. But again, maybe that was what was available, and they took it. So got a body in there that's going to kind of alleviate the pressure of having Jones back sooner or later. Again, it's really coming down to Aaron Jones. Definitely keep a look-see on that, because is Aaron Jones now, they're thinking he might be out for another 2 weeks, another 3 weeks. So usually that's when they make moves like this, is because there's got to be concern in the building about their player, their star player in Aaron Jones.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. You saw that Aaron Jones got injured the last time he played in Week 5, and now, like you said, that looks like it's like little. It's not the guy to come and replace him. Like maybe back to Stoney's just thinking. I'm thinking the same way you are. Cam Akers is just like, all right, they grabbed another guy to fill a spot in here to help out. It's another body. I don't think he's going to put up a lot of great numbers. He's just a little addition to him, see what they can do, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not losing a whole lot. So I don't think he like broke the internet or anything. But yeah, you know, Vikings got a tough game for him this week, though. You know, they got a lot riding here. See how long they can keep this undefeated streak going. All right, so yeah, let's move on to our
Chiefs, right?
Yep. The next segment here. After Robert Saleh, now we know a lot of seats are getting warm. So we're going to talk about some of the coaches now that are in the hot seat here. All right. So there's a few of them here. These are the ones we're going to kind of talk about. You guys let us know what you think, if you believe that these guys are deserving to be on the hot seat or not. And then let us know what we're going to talk about. We've got another comment here. You didn't see the not part. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't. My bad. It said not in parentheses. So, yeah, he was joking about breaking the internet here on this one. So, my bad. Small writing. My eyesight is as good as it used to be, I guess, anymore. All right. So, here we go. All right. It's your coach's hot seat, Joe. Let's talk about Doug Peterson here. I got him first on the list here. So, Doug Peterson, they go to London. It's not Wembley or whatever, you know, where they normally would play. So there was a lot of Chicago Bears fans, Joe. It was like a Bears home game, and they were going nuts there for the Bears. It was a tough game, a lot of turnovers here. The Bears defense getting it done a few different times, which it set it up for easy for Caleb Williams. I think Caleb Williams played really well, but I don't think it was, again, it was a major is showing of his talent and what he could do altogether. I mean, he made some good throws here, especially that fade route, and dropped it where it needs to be to Keenan Allen. But Chicago gets it done. Doug Peterson loses in a game that they probably should have won. And then they got a back-to-back London games here. Now they will be playing a home game in Wembley. So I'm telling you this, they lost there. If they're not playing a back-to-back London trip, I think he's fired on the plane, you know, when they land back in the States, getting off the plane. The fact that they have to stay there again and the plane ain't coming back to the States yet for him to clean out his desk, I think saved him one more week here, but maybe just until the inevitable next week.
I actually think that they're just going to leave him at the airport. They're just not going to bring him back. Just leave him there. And that's going to be the hint of, like, fired. Have a nice life. But yeah, Doug Peterson.
Oh, you don't have a boarding pass. I wonder how that happened.
Yeah. Hey, security, check this guy right over. Cavity check. Doug Peterson, like, this is something that's been, this team has been struggling mightily. Peterson, when he first got hired, a little bit of a spark with this offense. The playmaking was at a higher level. Like, we saw every week the Jaguars bringing the competitive edge and actually upsetting some teams that we didn't think they would win against. So now you're seeing that. You're not seeing the spark. And I understand everybody goes through injuries. Everybody does. But when you're a team like the Jaguars, who you are showing this. Like, you were seen as a division winner a couple of seasons ago. Season, you kind of gave it up at the end, and now, like, okay, we're going to regroup, we're going to come back this year, and we're going to march on, and we're going to charge for that division again, and they've fallen flat on their face. It doesn't matter what kind of plays that they're calling Doug Peterson and the staff. They're just failing. They're failing as coaches, and it's not the coach's fault either. It's the players, too. Trevor Lawrence is not playing up to par. So that offense is just it's so problematic. It really is. Like, there's no big plays. There's nothing to be excited about as a Jaguars fan. And because of that, because of the struggles on offense, the defense has to be out there all the time. And they get exhausted. So it's just one thing after another, and one mistake compounds another. And before you know, you just continue to lose games. So, Doug Peterson, I'm sorry. Like, I really do think, you know, the pink slip is in the mail. Like, it's only a matter of time. I don't even think that it has to go until the end of the season. If it does, good for him. He keeps his job for that. But I don't think that this can go on much longer for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think something has to change, and it has to change from the top to the bottom. So, Doug Peterson is hot. His seat's got to be scalding hot at this point.
Yeah, scalding hot, right?
One thing after another. When you're facing the Colts, that was a game that maybe you should probably win, or they did. In the end, it's very close though. But then these other games that they had where, man, the Jaguars, they should pull this off, and they just don't. They just don't get it done. Doug Peterson not only doesn't have his team, but the players are just not responding to him. I don't know. I'm from an outsider looking in, but it looks like he's lost the team already. It looks like there's just nothing there. It's like a corpse just showing up to the game. So I definitely think that Peterson is on his way out sooner rather than.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and the team isn't playing well. I mean, I'm watching this, and the receivers aren't helping Trevor Lawrence out either on this whole thing. They're dropping balls left and right. Gabe Davis, I thought he was going to do better. He's not the guy at all either. Like, there was a bunch of plays that could have been made in that team in that game, and like you said, it's just overall a bad team. And the defense trying to stay in it, but still they're not even effective. Just too many mistakes, and Trevor Lawrence again trying to one interception he had, he just threw it right down the middle, and it seemed like he was even going to the receiver. Like, where were you going? He was so overthrown, it was ridiculous. But if you don't trust your receivers to come down with it, I mean, you're going to have issues here. You're going to feel pressure to kind of do a lot of different things and force things and make mistakes. So overall, like you said, maybe it is. He lost a team, but I think just the team is playing poorly. He just, like you said, and the wide receivers aren't helping Trevor Lawrence out at all.
On this team. When your wide receiver, your number one wide receiver is your tight end who just arrived back healthy. With 10 catches, 102 yards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I like Brian Thomas Jr. a lot. I don't think they get him involved enough.
No.
I think that he needs to be involved. Gabe Davis, like you mentioned, like, he's just mediocre at this point. It's not playing. Christian Kirk doesn't even get the ball like he used to. So it's like, I think the chemistry is like, I don't, the offense with that Trevor Lawrence is running, he's not getting the ball to all his playmakers. And even when he does, like you mentioned before, like, they don't have the surest hands. So for the spark that Evan Ingram gave them, nobody else showed up to the party. So it's like, you can't have one go off 1 week. The next week it's going to be somebody else. The next week it's going to be somebody else. You need everybody to pitch in. So the Jaguars, they definitely are playing good football. I think it continues to be bad for the rest of the season. I don't know. They can turn some things around late in the season, but by then it's going to be too late anyway. But they also make a mistake. You know, the Jaguars, they trade their D tackle, Robertson Harris, has been a standout D tackle for them, and they give him a sixth rounder. Now, not currently. It's 2026. So
yep.
It's like they're just now they're just making a bad decision in the front office, bad decision on the field. It just keeps getting worse for the Jets.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they're going to move to London way sooner than we expected then after this one. But yeah, so that was one of my probably hot takes this year, and it's an egg right now. So failed on that hot take, you know, for those guys. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with them. Let's move on to the Kevin Stefanski now. Again, we talked about this scenario a few different times throughout the offseason, but then also, you know, last week and throughout the season too, as well as this team is not playing up to par either. Yes, they've got injuries on the offensive line, things like that, but Deshaun Watson, we were trying to see if he could get back to show something, you know, of his former self at all. And excuse me, whether he's even trying to or he can or can't, the offensive line isn't really helping him either on top of it all. Because, again, he can't even get it out quick enough to get to these receivers and things like that. Hence why Amari Cooper is very frustrated with the way the offense is. You don't have your star running back there right now to help alleviate some of those issues here. Nick Chubb, you know, and get that ground game going. But Kevin Stefanski as the leader, your head coach, the offensive guru, you got to get this thing going with what you have here. Make some plays, mix it up, get some screens out there, something within Joku, something to get the offense going somewhere, and it's just not.
Yeah, there's no protection. I mean, they're so banged up. None of the backups are coming in and doing their job, and I get it. They're not as good as the guy in front of them. At the same point in time, you just got to dig deep. You got to find a way, and then Kevin Stefanski, for God's sakes, is the play caller. Like, there's a lot more pressure on him now because you're not even making any creative calls. Like, get David Njoku the ball more. It doesn't have to be down the field. It could be 5 yards. It could be 4 yards, 3 yards. Just get the ball in his hands and let him run. And just like anybody else that's on that offense, you know, just get them the football. The run after the catch is a big deal in the NFL. Just create some plays to move the ball a few yards every play. It doesn't have to be a 20-yard pass. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It just, for God's sakes, no creativity in this offense. Mm-hmm. And Stefanski, being the head, he's made some bonehead calls as a head coach. Going for it, not going for it, challenging plays that shouldn't even be challenged. Losing timeouts. I mean, the list goes on for Kevin, and it's not getting any better. In fact, it's getting worse this year. This is a team that was seen as a team that was going to be competing for just not only the division, but competing for the playoffs and getting deep into the playoffs.
Right.
But they've been completely derailed. Everybody wants to point the finger at the quarterback, Deshaun Watson. He does deserve some of the blame, no doubt about it. However, it's not just him. It's the offensive line. It's the play calling. It's everybody together. And the fact that they haven't had Nick Chubb there, it does hurt. But it's not the reason why they can't win football games. Mm-hmm. It's a product on the football field week in and week out. And, yes, it's nice that Nick Chubb is on his way. It sounds like he'll be ready to go this week. And if let's just say even if he doesn't go this week and they push it off one more week, you have the players that you've had from the beginning of the season to win games, and you're just not executing. It's that simple. Offensively is the biggest problem. Defensively, we're still concerned about that too. The defense is nowhere near what they were last season.
Right,
and it's not like they four or five guys left the team. They got the same team, but different results this year. So, how much of that is the offense struggles, and now the fact that they're always on the field that plays a huge part of it, or is it just execution on the defensive side of them? Because we've seen plays where it's like, oh, that's the Cleveland defense I remember, but there's a blown coverage and a guy's by himself in the end zone. So it's got to change, and it's got to start with Kevin. Like honestly, I understand he just signed an extension, you know, so everybody thought that he was locked in and everything, but that doesn't mean jack. Not when you have a guy like Mike Vrabel on the staff ready, waiting. And this had to be a plan all along. They're like, we'll give Kevin Stefanski the extension because in our back pocket, we got Mike Vrabel sitting here. And if he does a terrible job this year, hey, we got a head coach in waiting. We could just give him the keys. So, Stefanski, suffice it to say, bro, sorry. It's for you.
Right, yeah, and we talked about this. The fact that even I think in the offseason when we brought it up, we saw the way the team responded even to Mike Vrabel here and his coaching because he was hired as like an assistant coach, kind of help with them. He's out there running with them, doing everything, you know, on with the exercise, not just shouting at them stuff like
that.
So bonding with the team, way different, you know, than like what the head coach is. And I thought that would be very a very thin line to do when you hire a guy like a polarizing guy like Mike Vrabel here onto this team, because that would, I think, would generate some kind of, you know, animosity or something like that with the coaching staff, something like that too, because you got this guy that everybody loves. He's doing well. He was a successful head coach. God knows why he didn't get another job. Maybe he was handpicking what he wanted and it wasn't out there right now, so he's like, yeah, I'm good right now. And there he is, and you're failing right now, and Kevin Stefanski. And so it only makes sense that, and like you said, even though he did get that extension, that, hey, things can happen. They could say, hey, man, here you go. Sorry, you know, we tried to work it out, but hit the road. We're going to work with this guy, and he's already right there. You don't have to do a search. Don't have to do that. You still probably have to interview, a minority, I think, to satisfy the Rooney Rule. But yeah. You still have Mike Vrabel right there, and he's got to plug in and play right there. And I think he can help right the ship. So, like I said, it was a dangerous hire, I think, on their part, but then also a smart hire in having him there too. But Kevin Stefanski, he's been there through Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, you name it, all these different weapons. Mm-hmm. So many times, teams that thought they were going to be on the up and coming here, they made a playoff run once, and then, you know, now last year as well, saying, this is it. Now we've got Deshaun Watson, this is it, and they never made it. And when you have those many expectations for so long and you're not getting it done, then it's probably time to see you later.
Well, here's the bottom line. Kevin Stefanski's had more opportunity than any other head coach. Like, he's been there for quite some time to make an impact.
Right.
And I'm sorry. You don't think that Kevin kind of looked over his shoulder for a second when he heard about the sign of Mike Vrabel? Like, no doubt about it. Like, hey, why did we sign Mike Vrabel? What the hell? What's going on here? Like, he had to have some kind of, like, awkwardness. Like, even when he met him, like, shook his hand, like, weird or something. Like, are you here to replace me and I don't know about it? Like, it's a bad situation altogether. I feel bad for Browns fans because this was like one of the years that they were so excited and they had every right to be, and this was a team that was on the up and coming and all this hype, all this attention, and all for naught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's the thing. They had a chance. They made it far with Joe Flacco, and they haven't done anything near what that was. So that's what made it. I compiled on top of this and made it worse for them from right now. So I think both of you right now, both of us right now can agree that the first two we spoke of are pretty close to getting out the door. So they could be the next two to drop.
I'll be shocked if they're not. I'll be shocked.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the next guy I think is questionable, Nick Sirianni. I know, and people made a stink about it in this past weekend where it seemed like he was jawing with the fans back and forth. And there's boos here and there throughout the crowd, too. So they're definitely upset with the way the team is kind of going right here. And they're not hitting expectations like they've kind of been used to in the past, you know, decade, I'll say, you know, since Doug Peterson, you know, make it to the Super Bowl. And then they got far too and made it to the Super Bowl with Sirianni and couldn't pull it off. But, again, not hitting expectations. You've been there for a few different years. Jalen Hurts not looking good. But, hey, you got your healthy guys back last week. And they were able to pull out a victory and look a little better. But still, fans discouraged right now. And we saw it with – Andy Reid. I mean, these fans were booing enough, too, that they just said, hey, we're passing on Andy Reid and see you later. He moves on to the Kansas City Chiefs, and we know the history after that. So,
right, right. You know, and that's the thing. Nick Saban, this is an interesting head coach because had a lot of success with this team when he first got there. The first couple of years, it was like you couldn't beat them. Like defensively, offensively, they were just, you know, stout. You just you had a hard time beating them. Bottom line, they were one of the best teams in football. And now it's awkwardly weird because it's not because of personnel changes. It's you've even enhanced what you had on offense with Saquon Barkley as your running back. The finger's got to be pointed somewhere for the struggles, and it can't be the players. Because I'm sorry, they have the best rosters in football, and there's a ton of talent up and down it. So it's on the coaches. Like Nick Sirianni, there's been some baffling decisions by him. And fans are now checking him. They're checking at the stadium. He's getting upset. He's starting to argue with the fans in the stadium and the seats and it's getting out of control. Yeah. And honestly, if the offense is struggling, that's Nick Sirianni's department. And the defense is struggling, you know, that's the new DC. Like, they've had two or three different defensive coordinators now in Nick Sirianni's tenure. And you can't just keep changing it because it's not working the first time. The team has to adapt to it and learn it and get better at it. And it just seems like they're trying to get a quick fix somewhere, and it's not working. And in the meantime, all the other teams in the division are coming up to them. You know, you got Washington Commanders now that with their rookie quarterback leading the division, for God's sakes. They're playing good football, complimentary football. And you got the Dallas Cowboys have been struggling, but then you got the Giants who – even though they're kind of not quite there yet, they're still figuring things out. They still need to add to that team. You're allowing gap to being closed just a little bit. Not to say that, like, you know, the Giants are going to sweep the Eagles or anything, but it's like it's one of those things where, like, you're just allowing those other to catch up to you. And now you've got Washington there. So the Eagles figure something out and figure it out quick and do it this year. Because you can't go from the same team personnel-wise and coaching staff, the D coordinators,
right,
and go from being a prominent team to all of a sudden we're struggling to get wins. We're 500. Right. We're below 500. If they end up below 500 at the end of the year, there's no doubt in my mind Nick's got to go. Like you can't have this thing personnel and players and be good. It just doesn't make any sense. So it's got to come to the coaching at that point. So he's playing a dangerous game right now. And if they continue to struggle with all this talent, I'm sorry, dude. Like, Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, like, ejecto, cuz, goodbye.
Yep. Yeah, and one thing that's a factor, I think, to it, too, is the turnover differential. They're there in the bottom, you know, they're not last, but they're fourth up from the bottom. And if you look at the group of teams that are there with those teams, it's teams that are losing right now. Raiders, Titans, Jags, you know, Seahawks even lost a little bit here. The Cowboys in disarray right now. They're losing the turnover battles. The Panthers, you know what I mean? Things like that. Those types of teams are all right there. And that is a telling thing, losing the turnover battles. They do have the New York Giants, so I think they can come up with a victory here in this one. But the Giants are starting to turn things down around a little bit, too. It seems like they're getting a little better despite, you know, not having neighbors in. They really kept it close this past season here, too. So I think that's going to be a closer game than expected, too, from Eagles fans. You know, because look at the Cleveland Browns are a dumpster fire, right? They're not looking very good at all, and you barely edged them out. So not the type of team that the Eagles, you know, fans wanted, but they've got a rough start, a rough road though. Like you said, that looking down the road, if they're not 500, then he probably has to go. Now, I don't think they cut him mid-season, but I think they will evaluate probably after this season's over and where it ends up, because a lot of question marks with some of these teams that they have to face. And right now, they're playoff contenders here. You know, they've got the Commanders twice still to play. They've got the Rams, the Ravens, the Steelers, you know what I mean? Dallas Cowboys, they could potentially get a little better towards the end. They've got them twice. And then the Giants, so twice. So, I mean, so, oh no, they got the Dallas Cowboys one more time. They already played, but, no, they do have them twice. Yeah. Never mind. And then they also have the Bengals in a week or so too as well. So they've got a tough, schedule coming forward. So, some tough games to try and edge out for them. And that will be telling, but Sirianni, you hear the mumblings from the crowd, and, you know, I think this team does listen to the fans more than they probably should, you know, via look at what happened with Andy Reid, and now he's moved on to the Kansas City Chiefs and made that team a winning franchise. So,
yeah,
I was never big on Sirianni coming in, though, either.
Right.
We talked about it. Either. We talked about the personnel.
Yeah.
We said that the success, I don't think, was Sirianni. It was the personnel. You did get Saquon Barkley. You're looking at this team, and you're like, these guys got better. Look at them top to the bottom. Yes, they don't have a guy like Jason Kelce in the middle. That's one factor where they lost a bit. But besides that, it's pretty much all the same dudes. You know what I mean? They should be good, and they're not. So that's on the head coach.
Yeah, so the other thing, too, is that this is his fourth year as the head coach of the Eagles. So, like, when he first got there, they were 9-8. They finished 9-21. In 22. That's when they kind of surged, 14-3, dominated the league, you know, and then 23, they went 11-6, another great year for them. And this year, with all that expectation, with the hype, and the fact that you added Saquon Barkley on top of it all, and you're 3-2 now currently. Let's see what they can do this week, you know, I'll tell you right now. It's not looking good, because they are usually one of those teams that kind of pair wins together throughout the year, and then they have a couple losses along the way. But 3-2 already after 5 weeks. Let's see what they can do next week.
Yep, definitely. All right, so here we got Mike McCarthy here next up on the list. And now with Dallas, the way they're reeling right now, they looked putrid, and I loved every minute of it last week, man. I mean, wow, the Detroit Lions putting it on. Dak Prescott. Oh, the three turnovers, I think, even the interceptions, he was not good at all. They couldn't – even they've got opportunities on defense at times, even with a good run back by I think it was their Turpin guy, set up good field position and couldn't move the ball, settling for field goals. Issues here, and that's the thing that we're not really – that's the problem. Because it's easy to say that you don't have your top two pass rushers in right now on defense or whatever for them. So they're struggling not having Micah Parsons there. But it's the offense. With the weapons that you have, even still here, you know, CeeDee Lamb not getting the ball, frustrated. Again, even though, you know, this shouldn't be an issue. And this is Mike McCarthy's forte, you know what I mean? And he decided to go back to Zeke Elliott, Dowdle too on top of Rico Dowdle here as your running backs, and run his offense, and it's not working right now. You know, they're struggling.
The fact that they're not running, they can't run. We talked about it like a couple times this year already. The fact that the Cowboys don't have a running game, they don't. 5 carries, 25 yards. That's what they have. Right. And I understand when you start to get down big, now you're be trying to throw your way back into the game. And that's kind of been everything for them. Like, they've always become one-dimensional because they can't run the football, and they have to throw. CeeDee Lamb ended up with 7 catches, 89 yards. He should have had more. But, you know, this is an offense that is mighty struggling, and it's because, obviously, sometimes things break down up. But then there's other times when you need to run, you need to do it. You need to be more balanced, and they just can't be that right now. They can't. They struggle with it. They can't run block. The running backs that they have is not good enough. Rico Dowdle was a practice squad guy and now got bumped to the active roster. And even though he has talent, he's just not the playmaker that they need. He's not the guy. So. They had the guy before. They just couldn't afford to keep him in Pollard. But then in free agency this year, there was a guy named Kareem Hunt you could have picked up for cheap. You could have brought him in, and I definitely think it made a difference. There's other running backs that they – and still currently running backs that they could give a shot, bring him in, work him out, and at least give him an opportunity. But the fact that they're not even showing – they're not even trying to bring other guys in. They're not even trying to bring free agents in to try to get this running game going.
Mm-hmm.
I, for the life of me, do not understand what the Cowboys are doing right now. It's we talk about how the Cleveland Browns offense is struggling. We talk about how the Jaguars are struggling. The Cowboys, to me, offensively, I don't recognize them anymore. Like, mm-hmm. they are not the same Cowboys that we saw. Dak Prescott got his money, but
yep.
we're not seeing any results with this offense. It is so bad that even if they have their defense, let's say they're fully healthy on the defensive side of the ball, we know that this past week they got Ron Bland back, the guy that has been missing all season so far. They got him back. He played. Trevon Diggs played. He was healthy. But their guys up front, even if they have defense solid, and they are a good defense, the mm-hmm. offense has to score points, and they can't. So it, even though the defense might keep them in games longer, mm-hmm. eventually things break, and you're going to be down two. Three scores before you know it, and now you got to play catch up. This is something we've seen, this reoccurring theme week in and week out with the Cowboys, and so far they haven't figured out or have an answer for it.
Yeah, and like we said, we know the defensive flaws here. They're not playing very good here, but that's what happens when you got, you know, lose your defensive coordinator to become head coach for the Washington Commanders now, who is actually looking really nice offensively and defensively. But both the offense and the defense failing in the red zone, defense giving their 30th in the league, giving up scores, and then also the offense is 30th in the league too. So when you're getting down there, you're settling for, you know, field goals or turning the ball over. How many times this season have we seen Dak Prescott throw an interception in the red zone and not get the touchdown down there? It actually turns around and gives the ball back and come up with no points. Multiple times this season. I would like to check the stat to see what difference of it is. But he's got 8 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and I would bear to probably guess that half of those interceptions were probably in the red zone, to my knowledge of watching Dallas Cowboys games. He's done it a few different times this year. So that's a major problem. And again, Mike McCarthy on the 1-year deal, this was the thing. You're paying your guys, your Dak Prescott, you know, your CeeDee Lamb and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And your head coach still, you know, you're not sure about. You're not sure if you're going to keep him around. So that's a big issue. And Dak Prescott getting that big payday and not playing like it either. So that, I'm sure Jerry Jones having a bit buyer's remorse right now, you know, having some issues here. But in a sense, though, what else was he going to do, though? He had to pay Dak Prescott, you know, because, you know, who else did you have out there?
I mean, they the cheaper route, they could have went with Cooper Rush as their starter, who actually has shown, you know, when he
has sometimes the opportunity that
he can play well. He can, mm-hmm. and sometimes, yeah, it might be better than what Dak Prescott. Now, I don't blame Dak Prescott for this. Like, this is mm-hmm. the fact that their Achilles heel is the fact that they can't run the ball. And right. that's really what's hurting the offense. You look at this year for him, for Dak, like, his stats are strong. He's struggling. But really, it's the coaching staff's fault. It's the GM's fault. It's the guy up there with Jerry and his son Steve. And what are you guys doing? You didn't bring in any running backs in. You didn't try to correct the problem on the spot. And because of that, your quarterback has only 8 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Not a good ratio. So he's struggling. The offense is struggling. The defense, once it gets healthy, won't struggle anymore. But before, you need to put points on the board offensively, and you can't rely on your defense for everything because they will get tired, and then you know how the story goes after that.
Yep.
Game over. So I don't really know what else they can do. Honestly, without bringing in new talent at running back and seeing what you can get out of what's out there in free agency, seeing if a little spark can happen, whether you sign like a guy like maybe Marlon Mack. I know a lot of people forgot about him. Still 28 years old. Yes, he had a major injury, but now he's 100% healthy. He's ready to go. He's a free agent still out there waiting for an opportunity. Dallas, you got to do something. Right. If you want to turn this season around, something's got to change. Just keep going like you are.
Right. And like you said, I mean, you got Zeke Elliott sitting there complaining he wants to be more involved in the offense. And he's averaging.
Oh, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, 3 yards per carry. So.
Did you hear why Jerry Jones, you know, what he told reporters about that? What did
he say?
He said that they're saving Zeke. They're preserving. They're keeping him healthy that way. Okay, Jerry.
Okay.
Nice, yeah. No, he's just not anymore.
Yeah. Sounds like a likely excuse.
But. I think, and just because of that right there, if they continue to struggle like they are and they do anything to change it, Mike McCarthy might be on his way out. He just might be. Even though this dude has brought them 12-5 seasons.
Multiple seasons.
Like for last three seasons or something like that? He's done a great job for them as a coach. But really quickly, things can change and be like, well, you fell flat on your face this season. I think and it could almost be an excuse, right? Like Jerry Jones could be like, well, you didn't do good this year. I think we're done. You know, and I want to bring in another big name coach. I want to try to bring in like maybe like a Bill Belichick who's looking for a head coaching job next year or something of that nature. So I don't know what the future holds for Dallas. It doesn't look good right now.
Yep. All right. Let's move on now to Dennis Allen and the New Orleans Saints. They got that red hot start here. And since then, very mediocre, but now also with the injury to Derek Carr, now look at what your team looks like. So a major issue here for them. So he could potentially be on the hot seat. We talked about him last year even a little bit and see what they can do, but they ended up turning their season around and making a push. But again, this year, like we said, that offense still ranked 5th overall, but that's mainly because of that first week where they were just doing it all around, passing, everything. Yeah, 2 weeks, first 2 weeks. Yeah, you're right. But the defense, that's his bread and butter again. That's his daddy. And they're ranked 32nd in yardage here on defense, 23rd in points. So that's what they got to get better at. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. You know, that keep the low scoring here while you don't have Derek Carr and you're not scoring like you are. Something happened with Clint Kubiak. I don't know if somebody said, hey, you know, we should probably run more. You know, forget the passing and do this and stuff. They went right to that, and they haven't been able to put up points. And now this defense, again, giving up 51 points to the Bucs, a rival, you can't do that. I mean, that is pitiful.
No, they're a better defense than that. And, I mean, I get it. Like, there was a couple turnovers. But I will say
them, Antoine Winfield. Hey, shout out to Brian Blair. He was looking for Antoine Winfield. Hey, he ended up getting a pick six for you.
The Saints actually did a really good job in that game, too, though. Like, that game was back and forth quite some time. And with a rookie quarterback in Spencer Rattler, I feel like in his debut, played way better than I thought he was going to be able to play. And he was prepared. He was. Yes, he threw a couple interceptions, but it's to be expected. It's his debut. He's a rookie, thrusted into the lineup because of Carr's injury, and I think he held his own. He did a pretty good job there. So, but now you're going to hear from Saints fans now, like, oh, we don't need Carr. We got this kid on the up and coming, and we should just move on from him. I don't think you should do that. I think that's a bad decision. But Carr's going to be out for quite some time. I feel like it's going to be another 3 weeks at least until he even is thought of to back from that oblique injury. Takes about a month to heal. For the Saints, they got a long road now without Derek Carr, and they're going to have to make the best of it, which I think they did pretty much this past week, Spencer Rattler. But again, like you brought up, Jim, about Clint Kubiak, like we complained about this guy the last few weeks because when you come out like they did the first 2 weeks where they did a great job of mixing plays up, run, pass, they kept defenses on their heels, and they were killing the league for two weeks. Then weeks three, weeks four, it was almost like what you said. hey, Clint, we should run more. Okay, but no, Clint, that's not what I'm talking about. Run the whole game. Like, we still need to throw. It's like to one extreme. He was one extreme to the next. And it's like, dude, no, find a happy medium here. That's what keeps this team, you know, putting points on the board. That's what keeps defenses on their heels. And he's having a hard time right now for some reason finding that happy medium where you have a somewhat balanced, doesn't have to be exactly, but somewhat balanced offense, and that's what makes the Saints dangerous. With the weapons that they have, when Derek Carr is there, the first two, man, like, they looked like an amazing team that was going to take over this division and not look back. Now, they've kind of left it open. With Clint Kubiak's calling, I'm just not sure what the future is for this team because of the uncertainty of what the identity of this offense is. We don't even know. One week it's aerosol. The next few weeks it's ground and pound. Like, what are we getting here? So they need to figure that out. And hopefully they kind of figure that out before Carr comes back so they can still kind of be in the running. And that way they can, when Carr gets back healthy, they can kind of take off from there. But again, I've called for Dennis Allen's head the last couple of seasons. Like, this dude has made terrible decisions on the sidelines as a head coach, and I didn't like him when he was with the Raiders. I thought he was a terrible head coach then, and for him to be with the Saints for a number of years like he has been, but what have you shown for with it? Nothing. You haven't done anything. You haven't even made it to a championship game. Like, and here we are again. It's like
rotation
around. And you're getting the exact result. You're not pushing deep into the playoffs. You're not doing much of anything. So right. I think with that all being said, like Dennis Allen, like you're welcome here. Like it's time to move on. It's time to get someone in here that can mix some things up, change it up a little bit, have a little bit more of a creative offense. Like Clint, I think, has the capability to do that. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is Dennis Allen, head coach and a leader for this football team, I question it. I don't know, man. Like, I don't see a team ready to play every single week. And the fact that, like, there's some questionable decision that he makes, whether it be kicking field goals or trying to go for it on fourth down. I don't know. Like, I've seen him go for it on fourth and five before, and it's like, dude, you turned the ball over. Like you left points on the board, and now the other team has it, and they drive down a touchdown. So,
yeah.
All in all, like Dennis Allen, like I don't know. I don't think he's a good head coach. I think he's shown it in the number of years with the Saints. I think it's his time.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. At least with game management, I've seen the same things of what he does in game. But it's tough too because when you look at the Saints overall, they haven't had a losing season since Mike Ditka coached for them. So you want to know how far back that goes, Joe? 1999, and before that they had Jim Haslett, and then the Sean Payton era started. So you've got some of Sean Payton's guys here still, and this is what I think the thing is with this team is you're still feeding off of the guys that are here from. The Payton era, but then without the quarterback. Sean Payton had Drew Brees for a good majority of his whole tenure there. So now Dennis Allen's got, you know, he had, you know, Jameis Winston there for his first time, then Andy Dalton last year, and then, you know, Derek Carr. You know, now he's starting here second year with Derek Carr. So I think the team is a good thing, like a mix of players, and it's almost like the Sirianni thing, but I think in a worse situation. I think Sirianni is handling the team of a lot of talent well, and they're doing well with that team. Dennis Allen, defensive-minded coach, has, you know, some good offensive players and overall good talent here, but mismanaging it, I think, in a sense, and doesn't have that quarterback that Sean Payton had. So I think we're getting some kind of like after effects at post Sean Payton. So what's the changeover? I think the team is going to have a little longer leash because I think time shows again that they don't really change like coaches very, very, you know, after a few seasons. They let him go a little bit. Even Jim Haslett was there for like 6-7 years.
Terrible.
But yeah, I know. And then Dicka, you know, was there even a few years and stuff. And then before that was like Mora for a lot. But again, not a lot of changeover at coach. So I'm wondering if that's the route that they go with this. They're like, oh, he's still a pretty good coach, you know, and we still got some good players. I think we can still be competitive. I think that's what kind of keeps him safe here, at least for another season or so. But if he continues to make those decisions in game, much like, you know, the Chargers former head coach too, then I think, you know, then it's going to be like he's overstayed his welcome like another season or so too long that we should have probably got rid of him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's the bottom line though, is that he's continued to make bad decisions over and over, you know,
I just don't know. The ownership will go with that. Right. I just think he's
safe. Man, you got to win games.
I hear you.
Just because your team history has a lot of wins and not that as many losses, like that doesn't judge the coach that's currently there. Mm-hmm. And he does have the quarterback to win. It's Derek Carr definitely can win football games for you. He can win playoff games for you. He's done more with less when he was with the Raiders. So I don't think it's a question of if the quarterback is still there. I think it is still there. It's just that this team, the reason the season was freaking abysmal is the fact that that offensive line was so terrible last year. There was no protection. There was no run blocking. So then you look at them this year where they drafted Talis Fuaga. You know, they've moved Trevor over to the other side, and things are working out for them on the offensive line. You see them improve up front, but all in all, like, dude, you got to give me something here. You got to start pushing the championship. You cannot not make the playoffs. Like, that is a fail. Like, if you can't make the playoffs this year, like, it's done. Like, I have to move on from Dennis Allen. Like you said, like, he's a defensive-minded coach, but he's also calling the defense. And the defense isn't playing well. So, I don't know what else you need to see from Dennis Allen, who's been there for a number of years. I just think that it's one of those things where, like, yeah, the Saints typically don't move on from early, but I wouldn't say this is a moving on from him too early. This guy's had opportunity. Nothing's developed. So you need to change some things up here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I mean, that's a potential we could see. I was looking at some of their defensive rankings here, and like you said, not very good here. I think overall points for – I think they're ranked 24th, I think. I mean, so, again, not looking very good on their end. So that's a potential, you know. But I think, again, they stick with him for this season and then make a decision later on. I don't think it's going to be a mid-season decision. Matt Eberflus.
Oh, we'll be mid-season.
Right. We got Matt Eberflus here. And I think that all depends on which way this team goes. Right now it looks like they're kind of making moves here and getting things, you know, on the road here and getting the offense going. That defense playing still lights out. So I think the team overall is doing well. He handles the defense. So defense is well. So I don't think his job is really on the hot seat. I think if they were playing poorly and like continued from like the first 2 weeks, excuse me, and couldn't make those changes, get that offense going, then I think then the chirps start happening a little bit more that you're a lame duck coach. We've got the quarterback in the house with the weapons. Let's get somebody else in here that can really hone this kid in and go. You know what I mean? They want somebody else, not a defensive-minded coach. Because that's one of the issues that you see a lot of teams have many times. You have a losing franchise, like, you know, let's say the Jets, same thing, the Jets, the Giants at this point, right? The Bears, the Browns, what do we all see? They try and get a quarterback to try and get that franchise going in that offense, but they end up getting a lot of, well, now, you know, the Browns have, you know, I've tried to get a bunch of head coaches that were offensive minded, but it hasn't really, it's worked out a little bit, but not too bad. But a lot of these defenses get well on the team, but the defense is doing everything. still the offense isn't rolling at all, you know, and they don't have that guy that can kind of nurture the quarterback and get the offense going, and that's ends up killing a coach. You know, Rex Ryan, same thing here. Robert Saleh, same thing there with him with the Jets. And now Eberflus, defense is good, but let's get the offense going, buddy. We haven't seen, you know, like they said, their best franchise quarterback was back with Jim McMahon, 1985, dude. Like, wow, you know what I'm saying? I think this season, as it rides out, I think he's safe, especially if they make a playoff run. If they start to go downwards though again and can't get this offense going, I wouldn't be I wouldn't be surprised if they do decide to move on with somebody in offensive mind here.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing is when you look at who they beat today or this season, they beat Tennessee in week one.
Right.
They've beaten LA Chargers in week four. Or LA Rams, sorry. Rams in week four. They beat the Carolina Panthers in week five, and they beat the Jacksonville Jaguars
six.
Like, they haven't beaten anybody yet, guys. Right. Like, they've had a cupcake schedule thus far. And the two teams that they lost to were the Texans and the Colts. The Colts, I don't know how they lost to them, but they did.
Yeah.
But the Texans, I get. So, I mean, they have a pretty weak schedule thus far, but after their bye week and seven, they play the Commanders. They play the Arizona Cardinals. The Patriots is probably win that one. Green Bay Packers, Minnesota, Detroit, then the schedule
is way harder.
So, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. I know that people are excited because they're 4-2 and things are. They got their rookie quarterback and all that. But man, this is a team that I still don't see. I know they're 4-2, but their schedule has been weak as hell. So let's see when they get to the meat of their schedule, how they handle those tough teams. Because if you're losing to the Colts, you know, that shows you everything you need to know. That team has been, very wary far this season. So that right there has to tell you everything you need to know. So now when after their bye week, when they play all these tougher teams down the stretch of their schedule, let's see what they can do then. Because they haven't really faced competition other than the Texans. So I get it. Caleb Williams has shown flashes. He's paired up a couple of games the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he's done a good job. He has. And, you know, he's making me look like an idiot right now. I will say this. A lot of those are blown plays. A lot of them are something that he did in college. It's not going to be standard. You know,
right.
NFL like that. So when he faces way tougher defenses and teams that are starting to pile up points, and don't get me wrong, Chicago is one of the best defenses in the league right now. They are very tough.
Yep.
And that's what really helps them stay in games and actually helps them win games sometimes.
Yep.
But I'm waiting to see what happens when they face that stiffer competition. And I don't think they're going to be in the playoffs at all. I think they are going to still end up, you know, at the best in the division. And that division is very competitive. So, I'm in Chicago. And as far as Eberflus goes, this dude has been terrible as a coach. And I can't emphasize enough. The guy is a bonehead head coach. He is absolutely – he's the worst. He's one of the worst I've ever seen running a team. Challenging calls, like, out of the blue when it's not even a critical point of the game. Just terrible decision all around. So I haven't been a fan since he got hired, and I just think he's a guy with the luxury of having a halfway decent team on his belt. And that's why right now he's giving the benefit of the doubt. But if this implodes down the stretch of the season, I think it might be a little rocky for him going into the offseason.
Yeah, again, previous records 3-14, 7-10, and now he's at 4-2 right now. But like you said, that second half of the season gets a lot harder. And I'm on the same page where you're talking about. I have seen Caleb Williams make some good plays, especially getting out of the pocket when the play is broken down and getting it to Cole Kmet, like we saw last week here or this previous week, making some of those big plays on the run. But again, what are you going to do when good teams bait you into those types of things and stuff like that? You know, getting past those tough defenses in a tight, low-scoring game, not against the Jags. He had said even, too, he's like, well, you know, I think I've already proven, you know, myself already. We've already beat three elite teams already. So, we're, you know, what else we got to prove? It's like where, like you said, you just listed off the teams. And you didn't beat any elite teams. You know what I mean? A lot of teams that are underwhelming and just not good. You know what I mean? And then a good team like the Texans, you lose to. So, I mean.
Right.
We'll see. We'll see what happens when it's played out. I believe the same thing like you're saying with Eberflus. I didn't like him off the bat, too. I think he was kind of a lame duck right away, too. But one thing I was impressed that he was able to get this defense going here, too, because, again, they had a lot of big names on this defense. They shed some of these guys off of here via trade, too, as well. And defense still good, you know, performing out there. Top five, top seven defense here. But that offense has got to be the key to everything with all those weapons you grabbed and Caleb Williams, the number one draft pick. So that would be key. And like I said, if they don't get anywhere, they're going to grab somebody who can get that offense going. That would be key. All right, so finally here, Brian Daboll. Again, you know the rumors are out there too. You know, the Giants, again, losing franchise. I forget what the stat is here, but so many years starting off 2-4 consecutive and things like that or worse. As a Giants fan, I see this all the time. And again, you try and hope to expect that something can change here. Things still don't, despite even, making advancements and getting some of these key players, again, losing our kicker. Now we've lost a couple games due to poor kicking. You know, I've got guys off the waiver wire, things like that, off the, you know, free agency. Yeah. And, you know, some injuries on defense. But the defense is playing well. And like I said, it's one of those teams where the defense, despite not having Wink Martindale anymore, you know, defense has gotten going here still. Yeah. But Daniel Jones, I think, isn't the reason why they're losing those games right now. I think he's playing pretty well right now. They found something with Tyrone Tracy here too as well. So I think even if Singletary comes back here, I think they could do a little 1-2 punch here too and maybe even keep Tracy in there more and then just sprinkle a little Singletary. Let's keep him healthy for the rest of the end of the season. But Malik Nabers got to be the key though too, because the one thing you notice too by watching the games too with the Giants, much like with the Jags, they don't have a guy there. Jalin Hyatt, I like to see. I've figured out, I guess, where he's been. He's just not good. You know what I mean? I don't think he's good. He's fast, but some opportunities that he had, he slowed down, got into traffic enough, couldn't get the separation, and then dropped you know, a wide open pass too. I think that's why he's non-existent, and I don't think Daniel Jones really trusts him. And right now, they talked about it on the broadcast. Him and Darius Slayton, they're so tight and things like that. I think that's the only guy he kind of trusts right now, as you know, as opposed to, you know, Malik Nabers when he's out there or Wandell across the middle.
I mean, Wandell's pretty good. Like, he's kind of like a high possession type of guy, gets a lot of catches and all that. Like, for Jalin Hyatt, though, for a wide receiver, though, you got to remember, like, it's repetitions. Like, you can't just put him out there for four plays in a game and expect him to just be like a gangbuster. Like, that's the thing, is like, for receivers, like, you need the repetitions, you need out there to get in the rhythm of the game and really truly be given an opportunity to show what you can do. Because if you go out there cold one snap, yeah, you might drop the football, you weren't part of the offense, and now you just get thrown out there. So like, for Hyatt, like, I really would like to see him get a legitimate opportunity with this offense, with Nabers out there and all that. I think he could make a difference. I just think it's one of those things where, like, he just doesn't get enough opportunity. He's not out there in repetition to get rhythm. So, like, that's the other thing, too, is, like, Darius Slayton, like, you're right. Like, he's become kind of like a security blanket for Daniel Jones. Like, he relies on him. He trusts him to no end. And it shows on the football field. Like, if you watch that Bengals-Giants game, he looks for Slayton a lot. He wanted to get him the ball no matter what. And you bring up a good point with Tyrone Tracy. Like, this is a guy that doesn't even have a lot of experience at running back. And that's the funny part of it. He was a wide receiver for the first 3 years of college, his senior year, when he was asked to move to running back. and literally just 1 year of experience in college at running back, and look at what he's doing in the NFL right now. Receiving, running between the tackles, outside the tackles. He just does it all. And I think even with Singletary coming back, I think it's fine. I think you need to keep Trubisky because he's got the hot hand. Like, give him the rock. Make him the starter. Use Singletary as a receiving threat because that's going to help kind of keep the defenses out of whack. You know what I mean? When you get Singletary in there and they're expecting run, and then next thing you know, they're throwing a 5-yard hitch to him, and then he turns up and runs for extra yards. Like, that's kind of like the part of his game that kind of is under the radar. Singletary is very good in the receiving game. So utilize him, utilize Tracy, and you got something to build off of. Because in 2 weeks' time, Tracy Jr. looked like the starter after Saquon Barkley obviously left. This is the guy. Like, this is the guy that you need to keep as your starter. So that's where you're getting all the success from. Productivity is there, and the offense feeds off of it. Look at what the Giants were able to do against the Bengals. Tracy had big chunk runs, and then they were able to capitalize with passes after that because the Bengals pushed the field, tried to make a stronger emphasis on stopping the run, and that leads your receiver a lot more open. So I think the Giants, they have something cooking. They got something cooking there, and I hope they continue to utilize it. And that's going to benefit, obviously, Brian Daboll. It's going to benefit the players. It's going to benefit, you know, what they're trying to do with this organization. And for Daboll, like, the only reason he's on this list is because for a couple years now, there's a lot of hype and it's a lot of disappointment, though. And the fact that you continue to choose to stick with Daniel Jones, not because, you know, we all know in the draft that they were trying to push to get Drake May, at least get a rookie quarterback in, compete with Daniel Jones, and have, like, kind of the future in hand, you know, already, so that way they don't have to rush for one later on. But you keep saying Daniel Jones is our guy. Daniel Jones is the dude. He's the one that's going to help us win games. But then Daniel Jones doesn't help you guys win games. You know, he does make critical mistakes in critical moments. And that leads the fan base thinking, wait, like, you was the guy, like, why does he continue to make the same mistakes? And that there is the hard part of it, because you have a coach that's trying to win football games, but all he has is Daniel Jones. And he has to continue to work with Daniel Jones to try to turn this team around. In the meantime, on the back, it seems like they would like to bring somebody in, but so far it hasn't lined up correctly to get a guy in draft or what have you. But here we are. Giants, again, you know, they're missing out on some football games. They lost to the Bengals. I feel like that was a game that they could have won, too. Like, they were right in the thick of it, for sure. But, again, let that slip away. So that's another opportunity. Now they play the Eagles this week. So we all know how that goes. It's going to be two teams punching each other in the face. So the other one says mercy. but nonetheless, like, this is a team that they have talent. You see it on the football field. Can Brian Daboll do enough to keep his job at this point? Because even though he's been for a couple of years, going into his third year, it's tough subjects. Like, this to me, like, I added him on this list because I felt like it was a good conversation piece. But I don't truly believe he's on the hot seat yet, because I think he's had a good relationship with ownership, and he's trying to tell ownership to be a little bit more patient with him because they don't have all their pieces yet. Like, he had to have had a conversation multiple times and said, hey, listen, I know we're struggling the last couple of years. I know this, I know that. We're still working on building this roster. Like, it's not something that doesn't happen overnight. So, hopefully, for his sake, because I like Brian Daboll, I think he is a really good coach. I think he deserves to keep his job. And let's see what he can do as they continue to build this roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is like I kind of look at it, too, because, you know, it is discouraging because you saw he kind of flashed. If they didn't go 9-7 that one year and make the playoffs, you know what I mean, then I don't think we're talking about this. Because, again, you look at it, and I even look back at it, and I'm saying, all right, he's only in his, like, third season right now. Yeah, it seemed like it was longer than that, even, too, at this point for me. You know what I mean? I'm like, really, that's it? And I think I'm on the side of let's not make – the rush decision right now, because that's the one thing the Giants did since they decided to move on from Tom Coughlin. They got put McAdoo in, got rid of him right away, you know, and then here come the multiple years of just, you know, Judge and things like that, you know.
Well, the crazy thing about Tom Coughlin, though, that you bring up is the fact that he was very successful with the Giants.
Right. It's not like even if they were around just around 500 still, I mean, it was good enough, and you saw that they were still even competitive. But some of the other teams, Cowboys were really good then too, so it was tough. But that's what I mean. So now you know, Pat Shurmur you went to, and he only had like a year or two. Then Judge 2 years, you know. So you don't want to get into that repetition of keep. Hey, this guy's going with this guy a few years, then a few years, interchange another head coach. And I think that's what they're going to do this year too. Is like you said. Stick around for a little bit because I think the GM's got a plan. He's getting some guys in there, some pieces. And I think Dable, you know, now that he's taken over that offense, you saw a bit of a difference. You know, Daniel Jones ran some more too. I think he's more effective that way, running and getting out there and making some plays. He's not afraid for it to go on fourth down. Especially if they're close, they can get it. You know, use Daniel Jones, do some different trick plays, open it up a little bit. I think the one thing they do that need, though, is another weapon for Daniel Jones, because I think if you put Daniel Jones, say, in an offense like the Bengals right now, I think he's successful. If you give him Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, you know, and things like that, dude, he's going to do well, you know what I mean? But right now you're just finally getting a number one after having, you know, Darius Slayton as your number one, which he's a sixth-round pick or whatever, whether you like him or not. He's got a case of the drop season, especially in big moments, you know, especially that playoff game that they were in 2 years ago. And Hodgins, you know, who got downgraded to the practice field, but then now he got upgraded back into because of injuries and stuff too. And that's the thing. Daniel Jones hasn't been able to have really good wide receivers there, and even healthy ones for that matter. So I'm not even saying that there's advocacy for Daniel Jones right now even, but I'm just saying there's this offense can work well, and I think as Dable stays with it, and if they get another weapon, they stick with the game plan, you'll see the offense turn around, and I think you can. And if that defense stays good under Shane Bowen, then these guys are competitive. I think they're competitive this season right now. If they had a kicker right now that wasn't kicking field goal percentage at 70% right now, they're in it because that defense is lights out, holding teams to only 20 points about average, and the offense is just starting to get some points here now. Unfortunately, they're still like 29th in points against opponents, but that's just because they just started scoring like the last week or so here. So hopefully they can get it going here. So I understand where fans are frustrated. I'm one of them as well. But I think to get rushing and say, hey, let's get rid of this guy right now, I think that's the wrong take to have. And especially for who? For what? Who's blowing things up right now that you really trust right now? You've already done the rehashes. You've done the new fresh guys that you know from the Belichick tree and things like that. We're done. Let's stick with this guy for a little while. Let's see what he builds. I think the GM's good right now, too. So I say let's roll with it. So I think right now his job's safe, too, as well.
Well, that's the thing, too. You brought it up when they went 9-7 with literally nothing. It was Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones, and that was pretty much the offense. For them to overachieve and get a 9-7 team, and then the years after that, you're like, well, if we add to this team with those guys, we should be even better. Maybe we'll be a 10-win team next year. You know, so like the expectations exponentially went through the roof. Like, and rightfully so, because you did a lot with nothing. And that right there kind of showed you like, oh, Brian Daboll's the guy. Like, look at what he did in just this season. Like, we were able to win games that nobody thought we were going to win. And we had the record nobody thought we were going to have. And things are looking up. So I feel like that right there was like the kind of misleading season for the Giants. And the fact that now that they're still trying to work on rebuilding, they're still trying to work on that offensive line, they still need another weapon, at least another playmaker. And they still are probably going to look for another running back because, you know, even though Tyron Tracy is looking really good right now, you need more than just one. So, and that's just offensive side. Defense, like you mentioned, pretty good defense. Like they get the job done. They hold
leading the lead in sacks right now.
Lower points, and you see the glimmer, you see the light in the tunnel. You know what I mean? You see it down there. It's there, just not quite close enough. But my thing is too with coaching is what have you done for me? It's a cold business, and he's in his third season. He may have another year of kind of latency where the wait and see like where this team heads next season, but always got to be worried because if the owner at all is getting fed up just like the fans are, you're not seeing progression. You're not right now. Like you see glimmer, you see highlights, you know, here and there in games, but the end result is win or lose. So if you're not getting 500, if you're not getting above 500 and you're in your third season, like, dude, you told me 3 years from now that we were going to be much better team and we're not. So there's always that conversation too. So even though I think Brian Daboll is a good head coach, he deserves to stay there. Sometimes it just doesn't work out like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we got having coaches like the Dan Campbells and things like that doesn't help because, again, when you join into a franchise like the Lions who have been terrible for so long.
Turn it around in 2 years.
And turn it around in 2 years. That's the thing. And that's the thing it, really that's driving this whole thing. And, again, it's nothing really even against Dable, you know what I mean? Because if you look at it, they went 9-7, 6-10. All right, 6-1/2, you know what I mean? It's like now this season they're not – you know, playing well. But again, like I said, they've lost by only marginal 1 to 2 points, 3 points here and there besides week one. Besides that, they've been all defensively and tight and close where they could have won them at any point. And he's a victim to the way the franchise has been run for the last 6 years or so in the losing streak. So that's where it's tough for him. And he's got his back against the wall for that. So
it's true, but it still comes down to wins and losses. It doesn't matter how close you were to
win.
You
do for me now.
So, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I want Brian Daboll to be the coach, to continue to be the coach for the Giants. I'm not advocating for him to lose his job at all, but I'm just saying that there's these weird intricacies of doubt, you know, for some owners, for some GMs even. And I understand that, you know, Joe Shane, like, they have a great relationship, him and Brian Daboll. Like, they're, like, best buds. Like, they get to get – you know, they get along. They're on the same kind of wavelength. So there's no, like, you know, rift there or anything. But it's a weird one because it's kind of, like, on that borderline third year. And if it does continue to get worse as you go down through the season – it begs the question anyway. Like, do we keep him? Do we not keep him? You know, we'll see what happens. But I wish all the best of luck for Brian.
All right. So there you go. That's coaches on the hot seat right now. So let us know in the comments what you guys think, too, as well. What you guys think if any of these guys potentially will be losing their jobs at, you know, the beginning of the season, next year, you know, off season or even mid season for some of these guys. I think some of it's coming for some of them. So, Joe, that'll move it on to our week 7 picks here. We did better this week. We bounced back. I could actually show the graphic here and not be discussed in a sense, you know.
Nice.
We're in the winning position. We're both 500.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. You know. I got another win back, so it was nice. 12-2 this week. You're 11-3. So there we are. We're back. We're back, baby. Finally. So hopefully this is the beginning of a winning streak for us to continue on in the season. So. our worst season start ever, but it's been exciting. Yeah. And this season so far has been up and down. Like you talk about when they talk about like the underdogs and the favorites. I'm like, how do you know who's who in some of these? Because it's so up and down, you don't know what team is going to show up, you know, with injuries compounded top of some of these teams as well. So it makes it that much harder, especially with not having spreads, you know. So
I know. Hey, everybody, listen, before we get started with the picks, just remind everybody that we are live. Make sure you comment down below. We are going to react to your comment. We'll give you a shout. If you got a question, answer the damn question. We're here for you guys. A fantasy football question, what have you. If you want to talk about your team or talk about a situation, maybe trades that transpired today, we're here for you guys. But if you want to help us out, you can take it a step further. We really would appreciate it. It does help us out, especially helps out the channel. Make sure you head over to YouTube, to Grumblings Media. Make sure you hit that subscribe button for us. Hit the thumbs up for us. Share the video to everybody that you know and love. And also, don't forget to comment down. And you can take us anywhere you get your podcast. You can also check us out on our website, grumblingsmedia.com, where you're going to find articles. You're going to find other podcasts like sports, entertainment, political. Just give it a shout out. Check it out. Let's go, Jim.
All right, here we go. Week 7. Denver Broncos and the New Orleans Saints. Everybody's talking about this one. Sean Payton returns to New Orleans. Broncos, tough one here. You know, Bo Nix scrambling a lot last week, you know, trying to make some plays here, but just coming up a bit short. New Orleans, like we just talked about, Dennis Allen in that defense struggling, but the offense also not putting up numbers like they were used to the first couple weeks here. So this is going to be a tough game here. I think with the offense and the struggles that they've had so far with Denver, with all together here, now they're going in against Denver, you know, with a tough defense here. And Bo Nix starting to kind of, you know, come into his own now a little bit. He's scrambling here, making some plays. That could be a tough factor here going in New Orleans for the Saints.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, the one good thing about the Saints is that they're home. Like, they don't have to go to Denver. So that's awfully nice. And here's the funny thing. Is like, you got two rookie quarterbacks. One's obviously had more experience than Bo Nix and has been able to develop and get better week in and week out. And the Saints, it sounds like they're going to rock with Spencer Rattler again because they liked what they saw from him. He had a couple of turnovers, but played pretty well for his debut. And I just feel like, you know, for the Saints and their defense, like they both have defenses. However, the Saints just haven't been living up to expectations. So things change around this Thursday night for them. I really like their four. Like they just kind of get after it. And for the Broncos, the defense is good, but Pat Surtain came down with an injury last week and so far hasn't practiced. If he didn't practice today, look for him to practice, even if it's limited tomorrow. If he doesn't practice again, you could cut him out for Thursday night. That would be a huge blow to the Denver defense. I like the matchup, though, because I feel like this is more balanced of a matchup now. Now that Derek Carr is there, now that both teams are kind of – they both are kind of limping into this matchup. And it's going to be a difficult one. Like, I really don't know who to pair, but I think I'm going to go with the home team just because they're home. I'm going to go with the Saints in this one.
All right, here. This is a tough one again. I think New Orleans is going to play tough. I don't like either quarterbacks, so you know that a lot. But I think Denver and Bo Nix has had the opportunity to kind of grow into it a little bit. I think Sean Payton's going to know how to attack this team because of experience and things. And I think it's the perfect opportunity for now Master to go into, you know, the old, you know, den here and show the old team, you know, hey, I'm still the master here. I run the coop here. And I think Sean Payton's going to have a big factor in this one and get Bo Nix ready for this one. So I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos here on this one.
I'm curious to see how the crowd reacts to Sean Payton.
Right?
Like,
I think they'll praise him.
I want to believe that they're going to cheer him because, I mean, he's been, like, one of the best coaches for them in history, right?
Right.
So, like, I want to believe that they're going to cheer him, but who knows? You never know.
Yeah, that's true. You never know. It could be they cheer him or whatever, and they, who knows if New Orleans even has a thing, a video set up for him, you know, to commemorate him, right. And then all of a sudden they get into the game, and then they're booing or whatever. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Exactly.
All right, so next we've got here the New England Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think the way now with Drake May and the way he played last week, you know, he made some rookie mistakes, but they scored. I mean, he's done better than Jacoby Brissett,
right.
You know, in one week, just like that.
Yeah.
So it makes this kind of game look a little more interesting for me because I was watching that London game again in the Jacksonville Jaguars and the drop passes, just the game, the team, like you said, it just seems like they're just they're not playing together, you know. I mean, it's in disarray. Mm-hmm. And I think OJ, Mayo here has the New England Patriots playing hard. I think Drake May, is going to get better too. And I'm not really thinking that he's afraid of this team here because, again, they're in disarray right now. It's the perfect time for him to come in here and play the Jacksonville Jaguars. But they are going to be home here. Typically, they do win this game. When they're here at Wembley and they play here, they do win. It's a tough game, though, because I'm really thinking I'm leaning towards New England Patriots here. What do you think, Joe?
Dude, I can't ever pick the Jaguars again.
Right?
I picked them last week.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised you did.
Because think about it. Like, a week prior, they played, actually showed something.
Yeah,
they actually showed
you
something. They
yep.
put points on the board. The defense played pretty well. And I'm like, going up against Chicago, I feel like they could make Caleb Williams make a couple mistakes, and then that kind of sways the game. But no, off the bus, really. Like, they just didn't show up at all.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're putting this matchup with the Patriots and the Jags, two teams that are struggling. One team has a reason to struggle because they just decided to put in the rookie quarterback. But I got to say, like, the Jaguars, man, they just play good football. And it's not looking good. Maybe I'm wrong in this. Maybe they do kind of wake up and they win, like you were saying. But I got to put the young kid in New England. Like, I like the fact that he can throw the ball. He can also run his legs. I feel like that's going to give the Jaguars defense some trouble. And then Patriots defense has to step up more. Like, they just haven't been living to expectations either. They got Christian Gonzalez has been locking it down for them at corner. You know, Juwan Bentley at linebacker. But, man, I got to see more from this Patriots defense. Even though this is technically the Jags' home,
yeah,
I'm going to go with no one in this one. I think Drake May gets his first win as a rookie and beats the Jags.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling the same way you are, too, as well. Jacksonville not playing very well. I think Drake May is going to get better. And I think that team has got a different mindset to them right now.
Mindset,
I don't think
yeah.
There isn't, you know, confusion. They don't think they suck. They just came off of a win prior to beating, you know, the Miami Dolphins, too, as well. So they faced some good competition. They can win. They've got Drake May in there, and I think they're moving forward. So I'm going to go with the Patriots, too. And
yes,
Doug
yes,
Peterson,
sir.
Again, dropped off of that. That's going to be a long flight home already. It's
going
to be even longer.
They
just leave him there.
Just leave him there.
Yo, he's gonna be like Doctor Who, and he's gonna go in one of those phone booths and just time warp me somewhere else.
Just find your own Doug.
Oh man! All right, so here we go: Seattle Seahawks and the Atlanta Falcons. Seattle struggling again too. Another team. After we just got done talking about, DK Metcalf. He's on that one more year, last year or so. They weren't connected again last year. You see the frustration with that team with the Seattle Seahawks again last week. And I think something's brewing because I even saw something about a DK Metcalf trade potential by week 8 or something like that. Don't know how true any of that is.
I don't know
if that's even going to happen.
But
just to kind of put it in idea, though, this team not running all cylinders here. You know, they lost down to the 49ers here. We're starting to get healthy again, which is good for them. And the Atlanta Falcons running on all cylinders right now, too. They play at home. They play really well. Kirk Cousins connecting. Like we said, we'd like to see Kyle Pitts get a little more involved in the offense here. Brian Robinson, Bijan Robinson is not – no, was it? Is he going to be able to play in this game? I don't know if it was Brian Robinson or B.J. Robinson's injured this week.
Bijan was out last week.
Was out last week.
he's probably coming back this week.
Back. Okay, all right. So that's they'll be able to have them that. So that's even more convincing for me. I'm going to go with the Atlanta Falcons on this one. I think Seattle now, it's that time where I've said they're going to take a step back. They find a way to surprise me and stay in games. I think this is that year now they do kind of go backwards a little bit.
Here's the weird thing is that B. Robinson was supposed to be out last week and he ended up playing. Everybody was deeming him out. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I'm looking, I'm like, wait, Bijan's got how many yards? I thought he wasn't playing. Like, he was deemed out for a reason, and in the last second, like, game time decision, they let him play. So Tyler Algier also got a share of carries, so they got two really good running backs, and obviously Kirk Cousins is grinning ear to ear because of that. Got a decent offensive. They got the weapons, and the defense is getting better every single week. They're 4-2. They're on cloud nine right now. They're killing it right now. I stop here. Seattle's got to travel from the West Coast to Atlanta, and I think it might be a long trip home for Seattle, even though they pulled off a trade to kind of bolster up that inside interior of their defensive line. I don't think it's going to be enough. I really don't. One other thing that I'd like to mention is I'm curious to see if the Atlanta Falcons, before the trade deadline, pull some kind of a trade to get another pass rusher. I don't know who, but they could really use it opposite Matt Judon. And I'm just curious if they're going to pull the trigger because they are above 500. They are one of those teams that are trying to win this division and go deep into the playoffs because they are in win now mode. So the Atlanta Falcons, I got to pick winning this one. Like, to me, it's not even an afterthought. Right. Like, I think Atlanta wins this one. They're going to end up being 5-2. And Seattle, like I said, long trip home.
Yep. Now the Tennessee Titans and the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo now got their wide receiver here. Titans, again, I thought Will Levis would kind of turn the corner and do something this season, and even though, you know, but coming to the last part of the division. And one thing is coming true out of that. They're going to be last in the division, and Will Levis not really coming around. This team is not very good here. Struggling after getting – I don't know why they let Mike Vrabel go. I mean, what the hell are you guys doing? Just the whole thing is a mess here with what's going on with the Titans here. I like the Buffalo Bills. Not much to say about this game here.
Yeah. Buffalo Bills, man, like, that's continue to do this win train, and it doesn't stop. It's going to continue. The Bills, they also got Amari Cooper.
Yep.
Expectations for all you fantasy footballers out there, because Amari Cooper just to the team. So even though he's there, he will be involved in the game. I just don't know how much they're going to have him involved because he still has to learn the playbook. I don't know. We out there a ton. But, again, they got their weapon. Like, he might even be out the decoy, honestly, for almost the whole game. They'll get this share of touches and stuff. Simple route concepts. He'll be out there and he'll execute it. But again, I think the Bills can win this one without Amari Cooper. Won't be close. Buffalo
right.
Bills.
All right. Next, we've got the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cleveland Browns. Cincinnati barely edged one out against the Giants. Giants really put it to them. I thought they could, but they even surprised me here, too. The Giants defense, you know, keeping that offense that has been really running well. Jamar Chase was really kept in check for a lot of it. It was T. Higgins that was really having a day for them. I think very similar things here. I think Cleveland's defense is going to try and keep it tight here, but that offense for Cleveland just is again, we know the injuries on the offensive line. Deshaun Watson has no time to do anything. Trey Hendrickson and those guys, Hubbard, I think it's going to be nasty here for them here. I like the Cincinnati Bengals to win this one.
Hey, Cleveland, tell me you don't want to win without telling me you don't want to win by trading Amari Cooper.
Right?
The Browns, like, before they even have this matchup, they're like, you know what, we'll give up Cooper, sure. Bengals, they're one of those kind of like hot offenses right now, and the defense is kind of feeding off their success. I got the Bengals in this one. I don't think they miss a beat, and this will end up going 3-4. the Browns, sadly, will go to 1-6.
Yep, here we go. This is a good game here of the week. Houston Texans at the Green Bay Packers. I was looking at spreads. I think the spreads say that DraftKings that the edge goes to the Green Bay Packers here. What do you think about this one, Joe?
I think it's going to be an excellent game. It's in Green Bay, so that does kind of skew things for the Texans. But, man, what a matchup. I do like the Packers. I feel like a little bit better of a defense. Even though the Texans have a good one, I don't like this at all. I don't want to pick this one. This was a really tough one. But I'm going to go with the home team, with the Green Bay Packers. Since Jordan Love has returned from his injury, it seems like he continues to kind of just execute every single play, and he's getting better and better now, and trusting the fact that he's healthy, because that's always a lingering issue, is when you keep thinking about your injury, you're going to re-injure it, it makes your play not as up to par as you should be. But Jordan Love seems like he's comfortable in the pocket, he's comfortable delivering the football all over the place. I mean, this is going to be one of the best games to watch. But I think Packers win it in the end.
Right. Yeah, I think this is going to be a really good matchup here. Two young quarterbacks. I think the Texans are starting to move into their own again. But, again, it's only their second year under this management and C.J. Stroud and Green Bay. You know, Jordan Love's second year as well. But Matt LaFleur, this offense has been here for a while. Dobbs, injured here or healthy for them. Now he was there last week too as well, doing well for them. I think that will help continue here. And like you said, the defense is good. I'm going to go and lean towards the Green Bay Packers here on this one, but I'm not surprised if the Houston Texans pull this one out. It's going to be a good matchup. I'm excited just to watch it.
Of course not. That's why it's a good matchup.
Yep. So all right, here we go.
Either way.
Yep. Dolphins.
The one key to that game is Joe Mixon. Honestly, if Green Bay kind of slows him down and keeps him under wraps, Green Bay will win. If they don't, then you may see the Texans pull that out.
Yep. All right. We got the Miami Dolphins and the Indianapolis Colts. Dolphins, again, they keep talking about, hey, we could potentially see Tua this season coming back. You know, that's what Mike McDaniels hopes, but not this week. Mm-hmm. And they've been struggling without him. And we see the difference when you don't have your quarterback there. Indianapolis looks like they're doing all right here. You know what I mean? They've got their guy, their filler. You know what I mean?
Joe Flacco.
Yep. Yeah, he seems like the perfect guy. He's like the new Nick Foles. He's like the new Nick Foles there. You know what I mean? As a starter, he did okay, but then everybody wanted him out. But now as that filling guy, he's a savior for so many other franchises here. So he's found his new role here.
Here's the craziest thing about it all. It's the fact that Anthony Richardson is healthy now, and they're going to most likely go back to Richardson.
Yeah, probably Richardson.
And Joe Flacco has the hot hand. Mm-hmm. He has the hot hand. Like, why would you take out now? You're winning games. Like, you stay in games. Like, it doesn't make any sense to make a quarterback change. Let Joe Flacco ride out. There's a reason why he signed him. I understand for backup, but he's getting you there. You know, and with your defense, it's kind of a little bit banged up, and the fact that your offense is can put up the potential to put up 30 points or more. I mean, why?
The proof is in the pudding right now, right? Yeah, and we don't talk about him as a head coach either, and even being on the hot seat, because I guess it's early still, even in his coaching career.
Yeah, it's early.
But
putting him on that list,
right? But again, you got your young quarterback, but if he's injury prone, things like that, that's an issue. And if he's still struggling, let him sit behind Joe Flacco again and learn some more. You know, I'm not against that. You know, that's the thing, is because the key for the coach is to win. And in this division, the way it is now, they could still be competitive with the Jags and the Titans playing shitty. You know what I mean? So they can kind of push to try and potentially land a playoff spot if they use Joe Flacco here. You know, and then they could still, if they wanted to, try and come up, dial up some trick plays for Anthony Richardson here, at least that keeps him healthy or whatever. But your job is to win as a head coach, and if I'm him, I'm keeping with the hot hand, like you said here with Joe Flacco. So that being said, if Joe Flacco starts in this game, I'm all about it.
He won't.
On this one.
He won't.
But So this is tough. That makes it a lot tougher here because Miami still kept it close, even though they, you know, they don't have their star quarterback here. But maybe I'll just side on the air of caution and go with the home team here. And I'm going to go with the Indianapolis Colts, I guess. Why not? Screw it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be Richardson there. First time back, I expect a lot of rustiness to him. We already know that he's a turnover machine. He doesn't always make the right decision. So I really do like Mike going into this one and stealing a win here. Like, I like Tyler Huntley. He's now more comfortable in the offense. It seems like they were able to come up with plays for him to distribute the football to his tight ends, to Tyreek Hill, and Jalen Waddle still don't have the chemistry yet, but I like the Dolphins in this one.
All right, next we got the Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings. Two rivals here. Vikings coming off a bye week. And then also we've got the Detroit Lions who are coming off a huge win against the Dallas Cowboys here. Now, everybody's talking about how that offense is working here for the Lions here. They're finding different ways to score, different players making plays here. David Montgomery playing his lights out here too as well. And that defense, one thing, though, they did lose Aiden Hutchinson for the season, though, with that tibia injury. So that's key for that defense.
Unless they make the Super Bowl. He'll be back for the Super Bowl.
So, yeah, well, so then they're crossing their fingers. But that won't help them in this game. This is going to be a tight divisional game. Minnesota at home. Joe, what do you got in this one with the Vikings that are undefeated? Do you think they lose it here against the Lions?
Dude, this is the game of the week. It has to. The Lions and Vikings, are you kidding me? This is the matchup I've been waiting for. Jared Goff and company, they are just hitting on all cylinders. The offense is amazing. The running game is amazing. The defense is definitely much better than what it was last year. But will it be enough against the Vikings? Vikings have one of the best defenses in football right now. Sam Darnold with Justin Jefferson and Addison. And I'm still waiting to see when T.J. Hockenstein or whatever, Hockenson, when he returns. He's getting close to being healthy. I don't think it's this week, but again, when they get him, it's changes whole offense yet again. So I like Minnesota at home in this. I feel like this is going to be one of those kind of like matchups where the first time around, Minnesota, maybe they get the win. Then if it goes back to Detroit, maybe Detroit gets the win. But this one, Minnesota.
All right. Yeah, this is a tough one for me. I think Minnesota is doing well. I think coming off the bye, though, they might come off a little sluggish here. And Detroit, they're hitting their mark. I think they're hitting their stride. I just hope that they don't come off of that Dallas win with how many points they put up and how Dallas was, you know, inept. You know, they're going to go into this team where you got, you know, Justin Jefferson, you've got scores all around. So
yeah, they lost it after all that.
I think the Lions have to really control the time of possession and run the football a lot with Montgomery because – I think the Vikings, with not having, Aaron Jones here with running the ball, I think that would be a little bit of a factor here on their end. So it's going to be tight. I'm going to go with the Lions on this one, though.
Okay.
So we'll see, though. I wouldn't be surprised. We'll see. I'm trying to do a couple different ones from you.
All I'm saying is watch out for that kid, Ty. He's a really good running back.
All right, next up, we've got the Philadelphia Eagles and the New York Football Giants. Giants at home. The record at home sucks. The Eagles, again, not looking so good either on their own selves here, but I think the Giants defense, they're going to keep this one tight. They're going to get in the backfield. They're going to create some pressure here for Jalen Hurts, but I haven't picked the Giants all season except for once, and I think I'm going to stick with that, even though I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants can kind of pull it off here against the Eagles with they've been playing, but I'm going to side with the Eagles. Just overall talents there, too. I mean, A.J. Brown's healthy. You got Devonta Smith. I mean, Saquon Barkley comes back home. I think he wants to play well.
I would be a lot more confident if Andrew Thomas was for the Giants. He's at risk of probably not missing the whole season at this point. It's a huge blow to this offensive line, their best offensive lineman that they have. It grows major concern. And now you're going against one of your division rivals that knows you so well. Knows Daniel Jones really well. The one that they don't know very well is Malik Nabers, but they're about to find out. I just, in this matchup, though, like, again, we talk every week about how vast the Eagles roster is and how good they are and talented they are. This is Saquon Barkley's return to home, and I think he's going to want to make a statement in this game. I got the Eagles against the Giants.
All right, we've got a comment. We got back in the Stone Age here again. It says, who do you guys think lands at Mini first? Hassan Reddick or Myles Garrett via trade? Do you think Minnesota goes for any of them? Are you
Minnesota
talking about
for who?
Any of these two players here? I think that's what they're asking, right? Do you see the comment?
No, I don't see the comment.
You can't see comments on there? Okay. It says, who do you guys think lands in Minneapolis first? The Hassan Reddick or Myles Garrett via trade?
Neither.
Yeah, I don't think neither does either, but you're talking about pass rusher. If Myles Garrett, we knew Hassan Reddick potentially could be on there.
I think, honestly, you think about Detroit right now without having Aiden Hutchinson. They're the team that you got to watch out for to get a pass rusher. Garrett's going anywhere. I really don't. I don't think Cleveland is willing to trade him. But I do see, because the Jets have already given permission for Hassan Reddick to seek a trade somewhere.
Right. So now he says to replace Hutchinson. So maybe he got confused with Detroit for some reason. I don't know. But he's talking about replacing Hutchinson, just as you said that.
Yeah, that's Detroit. That's the only team that I see right now where Reddick would just fit right in. Teams like that could utilize him. I mean, I think of the Raiders. Like, look at what the Raiders don't have now. Christian Wilkins seems like he's done for the year. Malcolm Kuntz done for the year. Two big time defensive linemen gone. If they think that with Aiden O'Connell or maybe even a move that they might make, who knows? If they think they have any kind of to kind of stay in this race for the division, stay in the wild card race at least, then you move like this to bring in Reddick. So there's a couple of teams right there that might make a trade, but likely Detroit, I feel like, would be the one because they are chasing the Super Bowl. They are ready to win now. Why not add Hassan Reddick?
All right, here we go. We've got the Las Vegas Raiders and the Los Angeles Rams. Again, Raiders, it was a tough game last week for them. Turnovers here. It was just rough. You've got the Rams here, I think, who still has some good talent. So I think there's going to be probably the more talented team, especially now you got rid of Davante Adams, and he hasn't even been playing for them anyways. But I think they've just got a little bit more going for them at this point. So I'm just going to go with the Los Angeles Rams.
I'll say if Jacoby Myers is a healthy go for the Raiders, that definitely gives them a leg up on the Rams. They'll have Jacoby Myers at their disposal, Trey Tucker at their disposal. That kind of gives them a little glimmer of hope. The fact that they didn't have Myers last week and no Adams and playing with guys off the practice squad. It reminded me of the Giants. It's like watching it. I'm like, oh, my God, what is on the field right now?
Yeah.
So the Raiders, like, they come in, they're wounded ducks, really. Hanged up on the offensive line, receiver, like running backs. Like, I mean, it doesn't look good, even defensively. And poor execution last week, really poor, a lot of penalties, poor decision-making on the coaching staff's part. So I think all that collectively does not leave you with a lot of confidence, even though you're going to possibly be playing the Rams yet. Once again, potentially not having Cup this week. An opportunity to come back this week, but it's still unclear. But even if he doesn't, still feel like the Rams have a better defense, the Rams have a better quarterback, the Rams have just better roster. So I think in LA, the Rams are going to probably pull this win off.
All right, next we got the Carolina Panthers at Washington. Washington really getting this offense going and just playing on all cylinders. But they've really kept it close here in that Baltimore game. It was a really tight, exciting game to watch. But Carolina again, yes, they do better under Andy Dalton, but they're not anything to compete here with what Washington's being able to do. I like the Commanders here.
Yeah, I mean, Commanders, they got a hot offense right now, and the Carolina Panthers, though, call it what you will, but Andy Dalton's playing well for them. Like, he's distributing the football. He's keeping them in the game. But I don't think it's going to be enough. I mean, I think Washington, and we saw last Washington go into Baltimore and really challenge the Ravens. He did a fairly good job against them. So that just goes to show you that this team is just a flake. It's not just a figment of your imagination. They are. Hey, I think Washington Commanders get the job done and get a win here.
And what's funny is silently, Chuba Hubbard is the third most rushing yards in the NFL right now. So it's pretty interesting factor.
Until Jonathan Brooks comes back.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's out of a team like the Carolina Panthers who nobody really pays attention to because of their record and things like that. It's funny. Next, we've got the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. This game, I don't think it's going to be anything like the NFL had hoped at this point in the season, right? Just because... Yeah, right? The 49ers, you know, they're struggling, you know, but they're starting to get healthier again, get back on track. Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes playing like ass, just barely edging through games. So what are we going to get? Are we going to get a game of turnovers back and forth all over the place here? And Patrick Mahomes looking bad, Brock Purdy looking bad, you know what I mean? So what is it going to be here? You know, there's no Christian McCaffrey. He's suffering from the Madden curse, you know, so, but, I think this is going to be a close game. I'm hoping it's going to be, a different outcome than what the Super Bowl was though. I think, the 49ers still have all the talent there, minus even Christian McCaffrey here. Like I said, they're getting healthier. The Chiefs have been stumbling and bumbling across some of these wins. I just don't want them to finally get it connected here and then start actually playing hard and on all cylinders and winning, because then you've got a dangerous team here. But sitting there at 5-0, I think, again, just like kind of how I was looking at the Minnesota Vikings here, they're ripe for a picking for that undefeated to go down. And who better than the San Francisco 49ers at home? I think the 49ers can get the game here in the regular season here though at home.
Yeah, and give the Chiefs the first loss. Yeah, let's Niners.
Yes, I like it.
No, I mean,
and Mason's been playing well too. I think he's second in the rushing. I think even.
My thing about the Niners, though, the difference this matchup though is the defensive line for the Niners is not the same as the Chiefs were accustomed to playing against. No, right. Eric Armstead. You know what I mean? They don't have Javon Kinlaw there anymore. So there's been a lot of changeover, I'll say, except for Nick Bosa. He's the man right there. Like, they have to double team him to keep him honest, to slow him down. If they can do that, that's going to really help the Chiefs in this game. But to me, like, that's going to be the deciding factor, is battle in the trenches for the Chiefs and Niners. Who wins that battle? Both sides of the ball. So I like the Niners, though. I think offensively they're well equipped to beat the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, honestly, defensively, haven't been as good as they were in years past. So that, to me, is like two teams that are meeting again that in different scenarios now, different situations. So it's going to be interesting. Blocks, but I think I'm going to go with the Niners in this one, giving the Chiefs their first loss of the season.
All right, we got the New York Jets and Pittsburgh Steelers here, 8:20. The Jets coming off a loss, a tough one where Zerline couldn't hit a couple of kicks, and the offense looks like it was moving. Defense, it was good, but again, penalties. The story to them, too, is penalties. They got to eliminate the penalties here. Pittsburgh, yeah, this is going to be a tough one here at Pittsburgh, because that defense is playing real well, too. So is Russell Wilson going to get the start yet, or are they still riding with Justin Fields here?
Russell Wilson is going to get the first team reps this week, so he is in line to start, everyone.
Yay.
I think they listened to our podcast enough to realize that they were wrong. Oh, my God. Listen, don't. Just the score last week when they played the Raiders. If you watch that game, that was one of the sloppiest teams I've ever seen. And if the Steelers couldn't run the ball, Justin was terrible. Like, he could only run. That's all he could do is run. He didn't make big-time throws. He didn't do anything exciting in that way. He just ran the ball himself, did the ball off for runs. That's how they beat the Raiders. So it got out of hand quickly. But thank God. I can't wait to see what the Steelers' offense is going to look like with Russell Wilson at the helm, who actually throws the football. Yep. I think George Pickens is going to be excited because he's actually going to have opportunity to catch the football. And going against a team in the Jets who now has Devontae Adams. So it's going to be interesting. They have until tonight to get Adams kind of at least a glimmer of the book down, at least some of the playbook. He'll definitely be out there. But, again, just kind of like Amari Cooper, I don't think he's going to be out there with all the snaps on offense, but he's definitely going to get out and be involved for sure. What a change of events here, Jim.
Right, yeah.
That had just Garrett Wilson. Now we're going to have Devontae at their disposal with the offense that looked decent against the Bills from time to time. Now they're going to play Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. This is an interesting matchup to me because if you have Russell Wilson as the Steelers, and I don't know. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go with the Steelers that have been playing really well lately, especially defensively. I feel like they might do enough against the Jets. And then Russell Wilson, if they can kind of get a lead and hold on to that lead, Steelers get this win.
Yeah, it's tough because for me, you got to look at continuity. Is that a word? Something like that. But,
continuity?
Continuity, yes, there you go. Because what the Steelers have been able to do, you see Najee Harris running his balls off. He's been able to do that. But now you add that to, like you said, Russell Wilson now being able to throw a ball to the other weapons that they have. The defense playing well. Mm-hmm. On the other side, the Jets, inconsistent. Last week they played a little better, but the Bills team, who hasn't really done a whole lot either pass pressure-wise, but the offensive line of the Jets not looking very good. And Aaron Rodgers taking hits. Like you said, he's banged up, you know.
Right.
So, and he took one even last week that was pretty rough here. So he had to run out and make some plays here. Yes, you're going to have Devontae Adams there, and yes, they're going to be – he's going to be good because he's just going to talk to Devontae. They're already on the same page. Devontae, greatest release in the NFL right now. Make something happen. You got that factor. I think that's what helps even this out. But I think that offensive line of the Jets compared to this defensive front of the Steelers is the factor. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with the Steelers at home on this one, too. But who knows? Maybe the Jets can get it together. There we go. And then the Jets, then they have some serious struggling going on here and some conversation. All right, so next we've got the Baltimore Ravens here. Two Monday night games here. The Baltimore Ravens and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think this is going to be a tight one. Tampa Bay really flexing their muscles last week, but I think, again, it was just the right type of team they're playing with Spencer Rattler making some mistakes on top of it. Ravens seems like they're clicking now. They've got it back together. So after that 0-2 start, everybody just relax. They pump the brakes. But I like this matchup. I think this is going to be a tight game. It's going to be exciting to watch both Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson make some plays. But I got to side with the Baltimore Ravens. That defense is clicking. Lamar, it's hard to stop him too. And I don't think Tampa Bay has the answers right now for it. So I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens on this one.
This one is going to be intriguing, I'll tell you, because even if the Ravens can run the football, it's going to chew up the clock, but the Buccaneers can strike quick. Like, Baker Mayfield is playing really good football right now. All of those weapons with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin having a great year, and in the backfield, they Bucky Irving, the rookie out of Oregon, is lighting the league up on fire. We told you to watch out for him. He finally gets his opportunity in that. And then also, a undrafted free agent from Syracuse, running back there. He also went crazy last week. So this is a team that can not only run the ball, they can throw the ball at will, they can score quickly, and their defense hasn't been playing great defense, but maybe they can do enough against the Baltimore Ravens. I think at home, Tampa might be able to steal this win here from Baltimore.
All right, here now we've got the Los Angeles Chargers and the Arizona Cardinals here. Chargers got a win last week against the Broncos here and a tight one. Arizona, again, they're like that team that kind of surprises me again because they're up and down again because they tease me enough that they're putting some points up, but then they string a couple losses together and you're like, oh, man, so I'm not sure. Jim Harbaugh. Jesus Christ. I'll get his name down one of these times, but
Jim Harbaugh.
monitoring his heart, you know, with this situation. It was weird to see a coach go back into the blue tent, you know, during a game, right? In this whole situation. So, prayers with Harbaugh and his family here. Look at that. We got a Harbaugh Monday Night Football set up here with both Harbaughs coaching.
Jim and Arizona, John.
Again, I think they're still rebuild mode, see what they can do here. I think the Chargers have enough with Justin Herbert, especially. I like the quarterback better. I think I'm going to side on the air of caution here with the Chargers.
Dude, this is a tough matchup to pick.
It is.
Like, I really don't know what to go with here.
Because anything can happen. You just don't know.
Right now, Kyler Murray's been playing pretty good football. You know, within this offense, and they just seem to rally around him. Like, the defense has been playing better than I thought they would. And because of both these teams, they're very unsure of each other. They don't play each other hardly ever. You know what I mean? Once every 4 year type of thing. So, like, there's going to be some unfamiliar territory. I don't know how the Chargers defense is going to deal with Kyler Murray, to be honest with you, with his legs. And then the Cardinals defense has been a pleasant surprise. So, if they can stop and make this Chargers offense be one-dimensional with the lack of receivers that they have, quality anyway, I think that the Cardinals have a chance to win this one. I think I'm going to pick the Arizona Cardinals in this one.
All right, here we go. Joe, we got a couple of different ones here. It's going to be an interesting week, but even though I say that, when we pick a bunch of different ones, you win some, I win some, and then we end up breaking even.
It evens out.
Right. It does. And it shows it even, too, with the way the records have been this week or this year. Not exactly the best, but right there and competitive like always. All right, so, Joe, that's it for the picks, and that's it for the show this week. Tell everybody one more time on where they can find this podcast and others just like ours.
It's easy. You just get on your computer or your phone, and you just type in grumblingsmedia.com. Head over to the website there. There's plenty of articles and other podcasts, whether it be sports, entertainment, or political-related. You can check that out there. Also, do us a huge favor. It helps us grow our channel and Grumblings Media. Head over there. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up while you're there. Also, drop a comment down below and share. And also, you can take us anywhere with you, anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right.
We love you guys.
That's it for us
this
week.
We'll tune in next week.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you guys next week.